I never kind of wanted to. I always had this like sort of ominous feeling based on my mom's like face, like that there was like, you know, more at stake here. So then I looked him up, and the first thing I found was it was just like a newspaper headline, and it was just like armed robbery, murder, whoa, contract killer, violent hitman. And like that was a moment where it's like he went from like entertainment, like Tony Soprano was like television as like a cartoon character, to like, oh, this is my father.
You felt it.
Yeah, I felt like, oh, I'm ashamed of this. You know, like this went from like glorified violent fun to like a real thing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ari Shaffir, and my feet are wet. I'm wearing socks, and I'm stepping in puddles, and those socks are acting as sponges of sorts to soak in dirty groundwater onto my feet, and they're holding them in there. If I stay out here, I'll suffer from foot rot, and I'll have gangrene or some kind of homeless foot situation, and I'll have to get amputated. However, I'm not homeless, so I'll go inside and I'll change my socks, and it won't really be an issue. Before I start, I'd like to make an announcement for my dates. I'd like to make an announcement of my dates. The biggest one, the Wilbur in Boston, December 9th. Tickets are at AliShaffir.com right now, December 9th. In November, I got Orlando Improv with Steve Simone, November 12th and 13th. And Tampa at the Improv there, November 19th and 20th. Tickets are at AliShaffir.com. Then December, I got Oklahoma City, December 2nd through the 4th. Boston, as I said, at the Wilbur, December 9th, and San Antonio. I'm going to go somewhere in between. I'm going to get lost, I think. In between the Wilbur, December 9th, and San Antonio. What is that like? December 19th weekend, whatever that is. I think I'm going to try to go fucking hit some random country. Do some hosteling. Like I like. I haven't been able to do it this year. So get fucking one new country in. Jesus, I missed my fucking goal of getting two countries in. But I'm going to get that one right then. Any suggestions? Fucking weirdo countries to check out? Probably just do one or two cities. I think I got like six, seven nights, something like that. Right from Boston to somewhere and then right to San Antonio. But all that aside, guys, let's talk about this week's episode. It's with Anthony DeVito. He found out that his father was a gangster and was killed by the mob, probably. They found him in a trunk. Unless he was jerking off in there and suffocated to death. They found him in a trunk. Riddled with bullets because he was a murderer for the mob. I don't know. Is there one mob? Is there the mob? Or are there many mobs? I feel like there's many mobs. Because I feel like we're remiss to be talking about Anthony DeVito's father, who's a murderer or a killer, I guess, for the mob, without mentioning this week's greatest murderer, Alec fucking Baldwin. That's right. You thought the man couldn't get any better at any news? Sure, he handled serious acting quite well. And then he went on to 30 Rock to handle comedy like a professional. Was there anything he couldn't do? Well, everybody said, what about murder? And he said, don't test me. I am God. And so he found a time that suited him fine. There was a director of photography who didn't like. The guy told him, like, hey, can we do this again? I need you to move over a little bit. And Alec Baldwin's like, are you talking to Alec fucking Baldwin that way? Sure. Actually, you know what? I will move over, and I will do this take again. Let me talk to the prop master really quickly. So he went over and talked to the prop master, and he distracted him. And just like in Nightmare Before Christmas, where that chick fucking put Deadly Nightshade in that fucking professor's drink, Alec Baldwin switched out intentionally. That's right. I'm saying it. We're all thinking it. Intentionally switched out real bullets for fake bullets. And I know they say, no, it was a blank. They just, some shrapnel went off. Is that a story you've ever heard before? Here's a story you have heard before. Man gets shot with a real bullet. You've heard that story a lot. Here's a story you've never heard. Fake bullets go off and kill somebody and injures another. I mean, come on, dude. Who the fuck are you fooling, Baldwin? I get it. You'll get off. You're rich and powerful. And you should get off. Rich and powerful people should not do time like normal folk. That's why they're rich and powerful, to get off on murder charges. That's the ultimate. It's the ultimate get out of jail free card. And that's what they're all saving it for, to get off on a murder. And Alec Baldwin was like, dude, I'm fucking 65, 70 years old. My wife is pretending she's Italian for no reason, or Spanish or some shit. I fucking hate my children. And I never got this chance to murder. I never got a chance to see what it's like for the life to drift out of somebody before you, right before your eyes, where you know you took their life. And I want to know. I want to know, do I get power from that? Sure, I can talk to other people. Others are my rich and famous friends. Hillary Clinton was a good friend of his. I'm sure she recounted the ways she murdered people, but he hasn't done it for himself. So he went to the prop master and he found the real bullets department. What? I mean, legitimately, why are there ever real bullets on a set? Why are they like, hold on, here's a gun. Let me empty the real bullets here and they'll give you. Don't even bring them. Don't even bring them at all. They're going to have to start making movies. Did that go off? No. Nope. They're going to have to start making movies with guns, but with that little orange thing they put on top so no one can see them. Dude, Alec Baldwin, I'm jealous of you. My heart goes out. My heart goes out. Not so much to Alec Baldwin, you know. A lot of people, like, my heart goes out to him. Discounting the fact that somebody got killed, some other human got killed. But, like, my heart goes out to the famous person. This country's got a fucking problem with fame. My heart goes out to the famous person. Not some other human being who died, who's dead. But to the famous person, my heart goes out. But no, that's not where my heart goes out. And my heart does also not go out to the guy who got killed. The director of photography. Or the director who got hit with ricochet shrapnel from the DP, bounced off his fucking skull, blew it apart. I mean, just shattered it apart. I think brain fragments, skull fragments hit the director and like kind of like fucked him up, fucked up his face a little bit. But my heart doesn't go out to them. My heart goes out to the underappreciated Kraft food service guy. Guys, there was somebody there, probably named Raul, who was making a delicious lunch for everybody, for all the actors, for all the workers on set. Delicious meal, chicken and a buffet of steak and all sorts of flavors. Sides you couldn't even imagine. Have you ever been on a movie set? Dude, Kraft food is the best. It's the best. You'll love it. You'll love it. But the first time I got out to a commercial and they were like, Kraft food isn't that good. I'm like, this is the best I've eaten in a year. What are you talking about? And that wasn't that good? Nah. That guy put up a fucking spread. It's a movie. It's a movie. So they put up a fucking spread. Even the extras got their little box lunches, they said, and go fucking eat it in the sewer. But for the real workers on the set and for the actors, such as Alec Baldwin, now this guy made a spread roll. Do you think it was appreciated after the DP got fucking shot in the face? Why was he aiming at the director? That's a question I'd like to be answered. Maybe it was a meta film. Maybe he had to like fucking pretend to shoot the director of the film and that way free him. What a good way to get out of your contract, though. If you're not liking the fucking set you're on, murder someone. Do it by accident, quote unquote, and you get the fuck out of it. Oh, Alec Baldwin is a genius. And how does it feel, Alec? Listen, I don't care about human life at all, but I do want to know what it's like to take one. So can you DM me? Can you reach out to me on Instagram, at Ari Shaffir on Instagram, and just let me know? Or show up to my show at the Wilbur Theater, December 9th. And let me know what it's like. Do you get power out of it? And how did Raul fucking cope with the fact that nobody ate his meal? Well, I bet he took a lot home with him. Still, it's not the same. You can eat it, but it's not the same. The mood was changed. I'm sure people still ate. You know, a free meal is a free meal, but they're probably just picking at it. Oh, it's sad. Sad indeed. But anyway, guys, let's start the episode. I would like to say one thing. I have one announcement to make for a big show, March 6th. My ski trip is back on. So, myself, Steve Renazzisi, Ryan O'Neill, and Mark Normand are all doing a show. We had to pick a place to do a ski trip. And where will that place be? We've done it in all sorts of places. Vail. We've done it in Whistler. We've done it in Park City. Now, where would we do it this year? Last year was canceled for obvious reasons. The year before was canceled for less obvious reasons. So I'm making the announcement. Me, Mark Norman, still recording, Steve Renazzisi and Ryan O'Neal, plus one more, maybe two, to be surprised. But that show alone is a fucking banger baller show. Three headlines and a fucking beach cop. Let's do the announcement right now. Tickets are available on Wednesday for what city? Salt Lake City, Sunday, November 6th. I mean, March 6th. Salt Lake City. Get your tickets at arishafir.com. On Wednesday, tickets will be on sale. Hurry up and get them. We got two shows, one night only. Me, Ryan O'Neal, Steve Renazzisi, Kevin from the League, and Mark Norman, a guy who I've gotten throw up drunk with. And he has not thrown up. Mark Norman does not throw up. Anyway, you guys, get tickets right now. If you work at a fucking ski rental place, I could use some help paying for this trip. The ski rentals are big. That's it. Get your tickets right now. AriShafir.com. No, not right now. On Wednesday. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's start the episode. Anthony DeVito, a very funny comic from New York City. Used to write for Michelle Wolf's show. That show's not on anymore. Talking about his dad, who was a mobster, found out later, and we just talked about, I don't know, lots of stuff about discovery and about finding out things about your life, and just like as you get older, having perspective on things. It was an interesting conversation that happened right over here. Please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast, wherever you're listening. Just go ahead and hit subscribe right now. It would help me out a lot, get the numbers up. That's it. Actually, let's take a quick word from our sponsor, and then we'll fucking do the episode. How about that? Hello, everybody. Today's episode of Ari Shafir's Skeptic Tank is brought to you by 3chi.com. Guys, find your chi. Oh, dude, that's not their log line, but that should be their log line. Guys, find your chi at 3chi.com. Here's what it is, if you don't know. It's Delta 8, which is an interesting... it's not THC, but it's like a... But it's definitely not CBD. It's a federally legal version of THC. But it hits you like in a body high and a head high. It's an interesting buzz. It's like a 60-70% of like just straight smoking weed. Not nearly as big as like an edible, even though they have gummies. It just like spreads it out all over your body. So if you're looking for Delta 8 and you want to try it, look no further than 3chi.com. It's formulated by a biochemist and made in the USA with USA grown hemp. Dude, I don't know how they grow it, but on the Delta 8 tree. Guys, so anyway, 3chi.com. Use a promo code SKEPTIC at checkout to receive 5% off your order. Again, that's 3chi.com. Use a promo code SKEPTIC at checkout. You get 5% off your order of all your favorite THC. Oh, buddy. THC Delta 8 products. And again, you got to be 21 and older to purchase it because it ain't CBD. It's been, if you want, you'll get your way. Oh, okay. It ain't CBD. It'll get you fucked up. So be aware of that. Don't try, you know, use your best judgment. But you got to be 21 and over to purchase it. Again, vapes, gummies, tinctures, and oils. 3chi.com. Promo code SKEPTIC at checkout. Get 5% off your order. Guys, find your chi at 3chi. Legitimately, 3chi people, if you're working here, you got to know that's a fucking sick, sweet fucking log line I just gave you. Okay, bye. Now back to the episode. All right, thank you very much for sponsoring this sponsor. So let's start the episode. Ari Shafir Skeptic, episode 446 or 5 or 7. I don't know. The last yoga with Ari went up at arishafir.com. No, youtube.com/arishafir. You can subscribe to the Yoga with Ari playlist. I made an announcement for the January challenge on the end of that. That's it. Let's start the episode. Don't forget, patreon.com/Ari Shafir. Help support me in my quest to go off in weird countries like wherever the fuck I go. In December. Ladies and gentlemen, let's start the episode. Ari Shafir, Skeptic Tank, episode 447. My daddy was a mobster. With Anthony DeVito. Starts now. We'll be right back.
You know, I found out my dad was a made man in the mafia when I was 18. And I was just like, you know, when you're 18, you're like, oh, that's like compelling. That's interesting. Like now I have like a cool secret, you know what I mean, to like tell people. And then like I found out like more about him and like his like relationship with my mom, and then found out like at 30 how he died. And then like that changed into like, oh, this isn't cool anymore.
Do they know how he died?
Yeah, they found him in a trunk.
No, but they know what, like, he didn't suffocate, right?
No, he was riddled with bullet holes.
Okay, that was the question.
No, man, my bad. Yeah. I should have left out a very important detail. No, yeah, they found him.
They found him in the trunk. He's like, God, thank God. Yeah. I was so hungry.
In here.
Oh, my God.
No ventilation in these Buicks. It's awful.
How do these Mexicans do it?
They're like, they close the lid immediately. They're like, this guy is, we don't like what this guy's saying. Get back in there until you have a different perspective. But no, so that, I remember like, finding that out, then I was like, oh, this is, so, because like, you know, like with the mafia, everyone has such like an outside, it's so popular, and everyone has such like an outside take on it. Yeah. And the outside take is like, that's so interesting, or that's so cool. And then I would have to have this moment of like, oh, I have to let you down. Because, like, I don't feel right just co-signing this knowing what I know.
Oh, right.
Do you know what I mean?
Like bad dude stuff.
Yeah, kind of bad dude stuff, or just, like, kind of having an ambivalence about it rather than just being like, and I'm, like, I get the factors of it that you're like, yeah, Tony Soprano is hilarious.
Yeah.
He's fucking strippers. Like, this is amazing. But then, like, yeah, seeing the other side of the coin of, like, oh, like, he might get found in the trunk full of bullets. And then, like, there's a woman on the other side of this that's, like, her life is, like, in shambles now.
It is weird when you see people. I think everybody sees people as characters. Maybe. I don't know why, especially now, because they're, like, I heard that guy from Game of Thrones, Joffrey, King Joffrey. You watch Game of Thrones?
Yeah, of course.
Like, he would get spit on in real life because people, like, hated him because of that character, right? And it's funny, except if, let's just say, which is fine, but you're still, and I would do the same thing, that's still a character a little bit. It's not King Joffrey. It's the character of the actor that plays King Joffrey.
Yeah.
But if you're his buddy from high school and you're just eating and someone spits in your buddy's face, you're like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
And people are like, it's funny. He's like, it's not funny. And we were just eating and someone spit in his face and some of it got on my food. Like, it's not funny at all.
You can't tell your friend. You can't be like, oh no, they just love my work. I'm such a convincing actor. Yeah, I'm being spit on. Like, how horrible is that? Like, you did such a good job that people are hawking loogies at you at like a Ruby Tuesday. It's like, that's your congratulations for a job well done.
Yeah.
No, that's insane. But it's also like, that's crazy though. The people that can't discern between King Joffrey and what I'm imagining is just like a 14-year-old British kid is unbelievable.
That's the problem. It's these fringes. So like, you want to, every time you want to say something publicly about anybody, you're like, yeah, we all know we're just laughing at them, right? It's like, yeah, me and this other guy are gonna go to their house and fucking, and like, oh no, wait, what?
Yeah.
And you're like, well, it's only two people. I'm like, God, it's a big two. It's a big two people.
Yeah. Those two people muddy up the fun waters for everybody else, because no one. I feel like no one just knows how to do, like, this is going to sound whatever, like, fun bullying anymore.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
What, like, is fun bullying? Give me a show.
Like, this, it was sort of violent, but it always just made me laugh. Like, this one kid, like, you know, in the 90s, he'd always, you know, he'd be like, oh, no, this, okay. He'd always go, have you ever been to Busch Gardens? And you know, like, some kids would give, like, these, like, real long-winded answers, like, you know, like, I've been to Disney, but I never went. And he would be like, and eventually just get bored of that, and he would just throw them into a bush. That's the only thing he wanted to do. But it was, like, but that, I mean, it was small, but it was, like, it was kind of inconsequential, but it just, like, made me laugh, you know?
That one.
What's it?
That one?
Yeah. You have that. You have a, like, because you did it, and there's this brief moment where you go, I'm going to hit Ari. Ari for that. But then you go, that's pretty funny, you know?
Yeah. It's the people who take it too far.
Yeah.
And they go like that. You're like, I'm not looking. And they just smack you. It's like, first of all, the smack was too hard. Second of all, I didn't fall for it. It only works if I fell for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it's like, it escalates to the point where, like, well, now we're in a street fight, and somebody's dead. But he said this other thing too that made me laugh. I just thought of it now. Like he and I still think I think this is a hilarious bit. He would sit in the front room of a classroom, purposely place himself in the front row, so that when everyone handed their papers up, he would have them all before he gave them to the teacher. But before he gave them to the teacher, he would draw a swastika on it with an arrow pointed on everyone else's everyone's paper with an arrow pointed from the swastika to your name that said "I like this." The "I like this" part is what always made me laugh.
Yeah, I like swastika. I like Nazism.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess that's like not a great example of fun bullying, you know. But I just feel like there were certain people that were just like they knew how to do it without like things getting out of hand.
The times have changed a bit.
Yeah.
Before it would like not get out of hand because you wouldn't have the crazies.
Yes.
Or it's like you could like, yeah, you could like. Yeah, I don't know. It's like you, at high school, you'd be like, you'd sit down, everyone else would stand up and walk away.
Right.
It hurts, but then someone else would come and punch you. And you're like, dude, what? We're just trying to give him some ribbing.
Yeah, man. You got to learn what a joke is.
Yeah.
I read, this was years ago, Bret Hart's book.
Bret the Hitman Hart?
Bret the Hitman Hart's nice. Book. I think My Real Life in the World of Cartoon Wrestling.
Okay.
He talked about like the bits they would do in the locker rooms, and you were like, yeah, you guys don't know jokes. He'd be like, oh, the anvil one time, he told this hilarious tale. Well, he filled a sack with rusty washers, and they just beat a guy over the head with him until he collapsed. And you're just like, oh, yeah, man, ladies and gentlemen, your headliner.
Yeah, I guess it's just for you. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, there's an audience. It's just like I'm not in that audience.
Yeah. I wonder, too, if it's like the crazies, like you were saying, it's like, well, before they were more limited, you know what I mean?
Of what
now,
you could do.
Yeah, limited of what you could do.
There's also now, yeah, like the whole world can be mad at you or hate you or like try to lead you to suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah, some stranger can DM you, a Chrissy Teigen type, can DM someone who underage got statutory raped and said, you need to kill yourself.
Right.
And then that person read that, a 15-year-old who, in the midst of being statutory raped pretty much every day, gets just a DM from Chrissy Teigen saying, kill yourself, you slut. And it's like, that's a new thing.
They're already like dealing with like algebra.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're like, I can't wrap my head around geometry. Now the lady from The Voice wants to kill me.
It's before she's on The Voice. But guys, she's got a great cooking line. Check out her cooking line. She canceled Alison Roman. Make sure to get on her side for that too.
Oh yeah, I remember that was like early on in pandemic, right?
It was early on pandemic. Yeah. That was a great one. I gotta do a whole podcast about that one.
Yeah. What was the bones of that one again?
I'll do a full one, but Alison Roman. So
give him a tease.
You know how there's moments where it's like like I told you before, like you can see a plausible explanation for this. And so like now that I'm looking back, I'm removed from the anger about anything. You're like, what's the real story? Hold on.
Sure.
Because the idea that something maniacal happened is probably the least likely.
Of course.
You know? So a good case of that is they taught women, like, speak up if you're getting harassed.
Great.
And so some woman was like, somebody grabbed my ass. She turned around. It was a young boy, a 12, 13-year-old boy, grabbed my ass. And she's like, he fucking grabbed my ass.
Right.
Unfortunately for this woman, it was a black boy.
Right.
So Me Too went right along with BLM.
Sure.
And he didn't touch her ass. His bet bag rubbed against her ass. And they're like, you're racist. But it's like they told her to report these things.
Totally.
And she felt somebody touch her ass. So it's like, you're wrong. But like, dang, just got out of hand.
Yeah. And I think that sucks too, because like, you're in that moment, you're all about equality. Mm-hmm. So if you're not going to punish a person the same way, then like, that's condescending. In a weird way. Do you know what I mean? Where you're like, oh, well, now you're treating someone different. Like, where it's like, okay, like you're saying, like, if that was a white kid, it would have been like, okay, this is sexual harassment. But because it doesn't align with the story that you want.
Yeah.
But that's like, it's antithetical to what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. But with Alison, it is weird. With Alison, it's just not a thought out. The enforcer's just not thought it out.
Yeah.
But so, like, when they went after Sam
A rule pick. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
They went after Sam for rape jokes, and like, there's a time and a place. And he was like, yeah, the offensive show at the 11:30 p.m. show at the Comedy Cellar is the time and place. It's called the offensive show. Isn't that the time and place? Yeah. But it's almost like, hey, guys, on the other side, like, I get what you're saying. You don't want rape jokes. Your tactics are not resulting in less rape jokes.
Yes.
So why do you keep going to that? It's like the Palestinians with the rocks.
Right.
Get a new game plan, bro. It's just not working. So why do you keep sticking with it?
The rocks is a good point, man. Because I don't really know a lot about their conflict.
Yeah.
But once you say the rocks, why do I know that? Do you know what I mean?
It's like, you've been going for this fucking tactic for decades.
Yeah, man. Move on. There's so many other things to throw.
Such limited, and they keep coming back at you with fucking lead, not rocks, fired out of a gun. So, like, it's just not going to work.
Yeah, boys, boys, boys. I've got a new idea. Not rocks.
Yeah, I mean, quit telegraphing. Yeah, boys, how about
Billy
not
the
rocks?
Alice and Roman thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They told her, right, be spunky. You're supposed to be spunky. Yeah. Women are supposed to be
totally
outspoken. And so they asked her about some other chefs, and she was like, fuck them, fuck them, fuck them. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, they ain't a good chef. Chrissy Teigen ain't a fucking real chef. She's a fucking model. I'm a real chef. I'm
yeah,
a fucking,
for
you know.
Sure.
She's spoken about two people. That and Marie Kondit, who did all this stuff about minimalization.
Oh, yeah, sure. I remember
and then
that.
She has this book line. And it's like,
yes,
how are you going to be about minimalizing, and then you have all this shit you're supposed to buy?
Take that, Marie.
So anyway, she's being spunky. And they're like, oh, that's so funny. And they're like, hey, you know those two people you shit on? He's like, yeah, those two fucking non-chefs. She goes, the two Asian non-chefs? She goes, wait, what?
Right. It's
goes,
like,
you know, they both happen to be Asian. She goes, oh, fuck. And he's like, yeah, it's going to be bad for you.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough time.
Yeah. And she's like, is Tegan's Asian? He's like, yeah, barely, but enough. Enough.
That's such a funny, horrible moment where, like, you're like, you know, you're almost like
doing a
23andMe honor, where you're just like, what percentage? How deep am I in a hole? Yeah. I don't know, and that was in the beginning of, like, the pandemic, right? So
that
it's like,
early,
you have this virus that originates in Asia, then this happens, and it's like, this is a bad moment for you.
Yeah, it was just like, you're fucked.
I get that.
You're fucked. Yeah. Over something she didn't do.
Right.
And then you look at it later, and it's like, I get it. You're trying to be spunky. It's that perspective you're talking about.
Of course. Well, man, like, yes, the chefs, these, now that we're going to get sidetracked a little bit, but like, they, you know, it's like reading recipes, it's very boring. So it's like they make sure that they have, like, they need to have these, like, personalities.
Because
it's
like,
you
have to be, not that much personality.
Right. It's like, well, I'm trying to make artichoke hearts entertaining. What do you want me to do here? Also, I'm not, like, I'm a chef. I'm not an entertainment person.
Right.
You know, so it's like,
I'm guessing at this.
Guessing.
I just know what's good.
Yeah. But yeah, it is that, yes, like what you're saying about, like, altering your perspective. Yeah, to go back, you know, I'll go back to my dad a little bit, because, like, then I remember having this feeling of, like, oh, my God, like, because when I...
Wait. First, real quick.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead, please.
Quick commercial, quick ad, 85 seconds, and then we'll come right back. Hi, guys. Today's episode of Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank is brought to you by my tour dates. Guys, my tour dates, where you can find all my tour dates at arishaffir.com. In November, I got Orlando. Well, Houston's already sold out, November 3rd. Orlando, November 19th and 20th. I'm sorry, November 12th and 13th with Steve Simone featuring for me. And I got Tampa, November 19th and 20th. Also Steve Simone featuring for me. December, I got Oklahoma City at Bricktown Comedy Club. December 2nd through the 4th, Boston at the Wilbur Theater, the famous Wilbur Theater. What a fucking great show that was last time I was there in 2018. You guys were fucking wild. It was the first big show of my last tour. And it was fucking tremendous. I mean, for real tremendous. And then San Antonio, LOL Comedy Club or something. I think that's what it is. November 19th weekend. Does that sound right? 17th? 19th weekend. 17th through the 20th. Phoenix, Cleveland, Denver. All coming in January and February. And the famous comedian ski trip show. Salt Lake City at the Wise Guys Comedy Club and Theater and Restaurant and Bar and Theater and Bar and Restaurant with me and Mark Normand and Steve Renazzisi and Ryan O'Neill. The gang is back. Get tickets right... for that one, it's on Wednesday. But for everything else, already available at arishaffir.com. Now back to the episode. Get tickets right now. Go, there's a fucking link right there. Go get tickets to the episode. Go tickets for the show. What show are you? What city are you in that's there? Go tell your friends. Buy fucking two tickets. Buy four tickets. And then invite your friends later. Invite your friends later. Get tickets right now at arishaffir.com. And then let's get back to the episode. Goodbye. All right. Thanks, sponsor. I appreciate that. All right.
Nice.
Go ahead.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like I was saying, when they found him in the trunk, full of bullet holes, because I never knew that. And then my ex, my mom.
When was he gone? What year? How old were you when he was?
1982. So I was 7 months old.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was 7 months old. Found out at 18, I was playing basketball. My mom pretty much kept me in the dark for like my whole childhood. She didn't want me.
Compare that darkness to the inside of a trunk as you're bleeding out.
That's what she said. That's she called it trunk dark, which is a Sherman Williams painting. You can buy.
Trunk dark.
It's, really it's an Italian line. Families,
yeah. it's black, but it's also no hope. It's like a hopeless black.
It's like a never-ending black.
Yeah, it goes on. It's close, but it goes on and on at the same time.
There's like specks of light, but then those light they end quickly.
Yeah, it's probably the days before that glow in the dark release stick from the inside, like the Jettis have. Oh,
yeah. So I was 18. I was playing basketball, and there's a guy on the court looked just like me. After the game, everyone's calling me DeVito. He's like, "Oh, you're DeVito. I'm your cousin from your father's side." I'd never met anyone from my father's side. Went home, told my mom, and then she told me that. So that's what I knew then. And then at 30,
she right away told you your dad got killed?
Pretty much, yeah. Well, because she was worried. That was the thing. What it would lead to.
You getting into the mafia.
Or no, yeah, at that you. Age. No, she was worried about my safety.
Right.
Like, it's fine, but she lived through it. So she's more paranoid now than I think probably she needs to be. But she's being cautious. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, she was in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She saw like the reality of what the world could be.
I love those people who have not been hurt and they just go like in the foreign places and it's like, dude, and all these like in like Rio during the Olympics, people are like, just waiting for you to turn the wrong corner. Like, let's explore this alley. Like, let's do it. Explore the alley.
It's so funny because they go in there and they're like, has anyone ever tried Good Vibes? Yeah. Maybe that'll work.
Yeah. Remember Train Spotting when the guy goes into the worst toilet in the world and he's like, hey, fellas, we'll get you next week. And then all just the guy puts his knife down, like, let's go. Like, I don't want to kill him, but so I'm leaving the knife here. But
they just watched Ted Lasso, and they're like, "I think I'll be that guy from now on."
Yeah.
But yeah. So anyway, so I find that out at 18, and then at 30, I have my ex girlfriend
Michelle Wolf.
Yeah, Michelle Wolf. I should let you know. It's, the tabloids are correct. Noting non-trans advocate Michelle Wolf.
non-trans advocate. Yeah.
That's a Chiron that is put there for her.
Down there. Yeah. Dude, I would love to be in charge of Chirons. God damn, that'd be fun.
That's a great time.
Yeah. Chiron's for like Comedy Central.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
For like a network that lets you fucking go for it.
Yeah. Yeah, let me rip
a
little bit.
Fun job.
Hates flowers.
Have they done that? Did you guys do that on The Interruption or whatever it's called?
Not The Break? Interruption.
The Break?
I don't know if we... I don't think we ever...
Wouldn't that be a good detail for like almost any comedy show?
Always makes it better.
Sitcom?
Yes.
Tosh.0, like anything.
Anything.
Just like, hey, you're in charge of writing ridiculous stuff about... that you probably won't even notice. The Simpsons headline next to the headline.
So funny. Because it's so quick that you can get away with anything. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Doesn't believe in collect calls. It's like, that's just funny in the moment. It doesn't matter. You know? No, it only adds. If you can add that in the video in this moment,
oh,
then we'll figure it
out. Yeah. I should do that. I'll write a few things.
So that's right. So then there, so I have a sex girlfriend.
He never dated Michelle. But I do want to say that I do like now, we'll get back to this in a second.
Yeah, please.
I like just starting rumors on podcasts.
Oh,
like, they brought up Sean Donnelly's name on some podcast, and I was like, is he out of the hospital yet? And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, the heart attack? And they're like, no, really? I'm like, yeah, I think he survived it, but like, yeah, I don't know. I think the left side is a problem, but anyway, and they just like, don't give,
dude,
and just go back to the conversation, and then Sean Donnelly will find out about this in a few weeks.
Yeah, there's nothing funnier than lying. There's nothing more fun.
You get a text like, you fucking asshole. I'm like, all right, the podcast came out.
You told people I served in Afghanistan? there's nothing more fun, man. It's such an innocent, because it's one for you, do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's one for you, and I always, because if anyone ever does that for me, I'm like, I can't wait. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't wait to just go with a lie. So I'd be so excited if someone was like, oh my God, like, you know, like, yeah, like, well, he just got back from Iraq and like, that's why he's a little like this. It's like, it was like, oh, great. You just opened a door for me to have a good time. So,
Jimmy Carr said to me once, just for laughs, he goes, the cancer's gone. And I'm like, no, I never had cancer. He goes, wait, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, oh. I'm like, wait, why'd you have cancer? He goes, I heard, it's not a joke, I heard you had cancer, and that's why you're the way you are,
so
because
funny.
You're like, fuck it, I'm just going
for
it now.
Yeah, that's great.
And I'm like, no, but
Yeah, do that. That. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bro,
I'm
do
fine
that,
with that,
man.
That's like, a... I don't remember who told me, but somebody for sure said that. I'm like, I don't mind it.
Yeah, I remember I was this was years ago. It was me, my girlfriend. We were at Sam New York party, and she just moved to New York, so she didn't really know anybody. So I was just introducing her to people, and I was just kind of saying whatever.
Yeah.
And like I saw Nimesh, and I was like, oh, this is my cousin. And then I just kissed her on the lips, and he was like, whoa. And I was like, yeah, man, that's such innocent fun. It's like, why? It's right there. Why wouldn't
because
you do it?
Because she's not my cousin. It never has been. So any of the whoa comes from a place that really doesn't exist.
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
The Village, where it's
yes.
like where it's like there was no monster. Why would we even watching this fucking movie? Yeah, if there yeah. was nothing
oh,
to be scared
break.
Of, why then
yeah.
nothing
why did you do
mattered.
This to us? You just oh. you made us sit through nothing.
Nothing.
That was the twist.
The twist was there was never any danger.
Yeah, yeah. The twist was this is a boring movie.
Dude, when I get submissions for this not happening. It's a lot. The one of the standard stories would be either something that happened to someone else,
right,
or something that
oh, sure.
almost happened but didn't. But the worst was something that. Just misunderstanding was never going to happen.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
So all the fear, all the like, oh, and this guy can't, and it's like, was based on nothing. I'm like, hey, dude, that's a story of a thing that isn't a story.
Yeah, it's almost a story.
Yeah.
You're right there.
If that had happened,
yeah,
then
that
yes.
been, yeah, yeah, that would have been incredible. Yeah. Yeah, that's the, well, I mean, I think that's what we were saying earlier. It's like, because with this, it's like, this is my mom's story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With my dad, because I didn't really live it. But then it's like, you know, so like I guess like parallels to like her finding out and me finding out. So that's like a, you know what I'm working with.
Yeah. Put your chest
on.
Yeah.
Put this on.
Okay. Does that bother you or no?
No, this is okay. great.
I just want to test it.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Yeah.
Go for it, man.
Okay.
So
wait, so when she told you, she was like was she still like what I say like going that's what it was. Where you
oh,
like, oh
yeah.
yeah so
yeah,
she
yeah.
can't once you've been robbed.
No,
you can't.
No, no,
and
no.
And maybe once you've been robbed, now I can't enjoy New York at all.
Because yes.
like it's like, oh, dude, that was a chance. Yeah, there was a half a 1% chance, but like now you see danger everywhere.
100%. Yes, she exactly that. Like she, like whoever, like she always had to know who I was with, where I was, and not just like in the way of like, oh, just like classic like Italian mother like paranoid. To her, it was like life and death. You know,
because
it's like the thing with him is like he the way she found out, even the way he died was like because in that life he would be gone for days at a time. And she would never know where he was. And then, you know, he would call, let her know he was safe. So it's like she lived that way all the time. So if I ever didn't check in,
like
it was...
an army person.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
So if I ever didn't check in, it was like, oh my God, he's suffering the same fate that my husband
Damn,
has.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Right, because you're thinking that everywhere. Like someone else didn't check in.
Yes.
That I knew. Dude, I had this thing. Isn't it weird how you get trained certain ways? I had this girlfriend who was, she was like... not money hungry, I wouldn't call it that, but she like wanted the finer things.
Sure, okay.
She comes from a little bit of trash, so she like
okay.
actively like was pushing that away.
right.
And so if I ever, I started gambling. I started like going to Hustler and Hollywood Park and like
okay.
these poker sites. Caparulo got me and Renazisi just to start playing 4-8 Hold'em and stuff. And then we go all the time. The best time to go is after we're done at the Comedy Store. So
yeah.
Go leave at 1:30, be there till right before rush hour traffic
right.
and go home and go to sleep.
Yeah.
Comics, like, that's a fine
yeah.
lifestyle. You know,
yeah.
it's either that or Xbox till
right.
5 a.m. So what's
right,
the difference?
Right, yeah, yeah.
And I remember the girlfriend was like, if you're going to spend money, like, why not spend money on me? You're just going to spend money on gambling or whatever? And it was just like that, like, kind of nagging a little bit.
Sure.
Anyway, then I had another girlfriend, the one or two afterwards, and she was like, where are you going? I was like, oh, I'm going up with my friend John. We're gonna hang out at his place for a while and watch, like, Simpsons and stuff.
Right.
And then I called her back like a minute later. I was like, hey, that was a lie. We're going to Hollywood Park Casino. Because when I told her we're going to Simpsons, she goes, oh, okay, cool. I'll see you in the morning.
Right.
And then I was like, hey, that was a lie. She goes, oh, okay. Also fine. Why did you lie?
Yeah.
About,
yeah.
What do you mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You're not going to get hookers. Like, you're going to I don't know, yeah. casino versus like what?
Yeah. I'm almost like, man, I have like less dignity for you
yeah.
than you would choose to lie about that. You're not even going
it's
to do
so
anything
weird.
Cool.
Yeah. We're going to have pizza. I'm sorry. We're getting Chinese food. You're like, what?
I got to come clean here.
Yeah. And
it's a different kind of noodles.
Yeah. But I was trained to be embarrassed about something and then like.
Yes.
To something that I didn't care about. It.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly to what you're saying. It's like, because you never know, and I mean, we know this as comics, because like, you never know actually how you feel about something until you like see it land on someone's face. It's like any bit where you're like, I think this is funny. Until you see it land on an audience's face, you go, oh, now I know what this
right.
is. So it's like, I just held this when she told me at 18. This was like something for me to be like, abstractly, I was like, this is kind of cool because like, I, you know a little bit from movies of like, kind of, you know, the charm of like being in the mafia or what that like could mean. But then there was like her fear was so much like of like, oh, I should be ashamed of this. So then like I remember when I told like my girlfriend in college for the first time, was the first person I ever told. And she was just kind of, I was like, are you okay? And she was like, why wouldn't I be? And then I was like, oh, wait, is this like kind of okay to tell? And then like telling other people, you know, it's like mainly guy friends, they would be like, that's amazing. You know, so I kind of, it grew in me like the way it was in other people of like, oh, now I saw him as like the world saw him.
Yeah.
And then late 20s, I dated another girl who was like, I told her about him. It was kind of a thing where it's like I never like planned on it. She was like, she didn't think I was taking the relationship serious enough. So she was like, I kind of used him as like a bargaining chip. It was kind of awful, you know. Where basically she was like, move in or we break up, and I was like, well, you know, I'll give you my dad. So I told her about him as just like, hey, I'm gonna tell you something.
We'll get a dog. We're not gonna have a kid yet. But I'll get a dog. I'll buy you 3 years.
Exactly. Yeah. Just the darkest version of that. Yeah. So then she.
I have abandonment issues because of my father. Like, but how does that add up to abandonment? Like, I just don't want to move in. I don't know. it's like Kevin Spacey. Like, I'm gay. Like, what? What does that have to do with the station? I'm like, I don't
that's
know.
That's my favorite apology of all of them.
I'm gay. I've been holding it for the right moment. I'm like in 1948, you know, where you can hit the thing and just everything evaporates. So you only get two of those.
Yeah.
And he's like, let me hold this for the right. This is the, and it is the right moment. If you were to ever like, it's all crashing down. Like this is the moment. But
it's just such a weird left turn. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. It's a left turn. It's a left turn. Like everybody knew. So for him, he was like, hopefully this gay thing saves me. And we've been like, we've known you're gay since the Usual Suspects.
And the rumors. And also like, and by the way too, it's like, gay's not a thing anymore. It's
right.
Totally accepted. We've moved past that being a thing. So like, I'm gay. It's like, oh yeah, that's not special anymore.
The audacity that you thought this could bail you out of what you did.
What a lost touch.
It's like, man, you came out as gay in the most homophobic way possible. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Okay, like being, it's like, right, you were molesting boys.
Right, yeah.
Right.
There's no correlation.
We're not accusing you of molesting girls.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah. That apology, sorry to get off track a little bit. That, and I think the Cuomo apology trajectory was maybe my favorite thing of the past year, where Cuomo literally went, I'm going to try to say I'm Italian before I say I'm sorry. That's my favorite thing in the world, that he went, I will try to just say that my people rape before I say I'm sorry for what I did. I was like, the balls on
this
guy.
Guys,
yeah, unreal.
I mean, he didn't feel like he did anything wrong.
No, I know.
Him, Ellen, you see them.
Yeah.
Where they're like, this isn't even one, like, because sometimes they internalize it. They feel the shame.
Yes.
But those two were like, I don't feel shame. I don't even understand this.
It's the best. When they
Al Franken, too. He's like, I guess I'll step down. You see him like, I guess I'll step down, but this is ridiculous.
They
I made
look
a
around.
Joke about feeling a woman in a flat jacket that you couldn't feel up when I was a full-time stand-up.
It's the best.
Like,
their apology, their apology is just like laced with like overt bewilderment. You know what I mean? Where it's like, this is not an apology.
Yeah, but you know, we have to hear women. And but I mean, why are we even talking about it? But I'm not saying that.
It's the best. Those fabricated apologies where they clearly feel they've done nothing wrong. I could watch a highlight reel of those all day.
Oh, yeah.
They're so funny to me because it's like they're just trying so hard to have feeling in that moment, but the feeling doesn't exist on a natural level. So it's just Ellen being like, well, I guess you just can't do that anymore, huh? And you're like, is that it? That's the apology, Ellen.
Vecchione said the best thing about it, and I think we all have to do this as comics. He goes, she should have leaned in. She should have opened her next show as like the Ellen DeGeneres, the Chiron comes out, and she just goes, you call that a fucking latte? Do your fucking job. What
yeah,
the
that's
fuck
hilarious.
Is hi, everybody.
That's
how you doing?
So funny.
And then like after every cut to commercial, like, what the fuck was that? That's not your whole cue cards. And just like at that point, people are like, she's making fun of it.
Yeah.
And
I think that's
what you're supposed
you
to
go.
Do.
Yeah.
That's the only way. It's not the apologies, not to feel this thing of like, oh, you guys are mad, so let me not try to step on toes. It's like, let me just talk to people who are cool with me.
Totally.
And just get them to be like, yeah, this lady's hilarious.
Yeah, I think it's a thing too where you just like, because you get so big that you like forget that you're like, you started as just a comedian.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what
they
I mean?
They put you in a place.
Right. So if you can remember like what got you there, which is just like, oh, you're just like a funny person, move that direction.
Yeah.
That's the move.
That's the fact that we're all like, is human. So my friend has this theory that people cheat with who they got, like famous people cheat with who they could have, they marry somebody, like models.
Sure.
Because they marry somebody that they could get when they're famous.
Right.
But they cheat with who they internally think they could get, which right. is who you were getting at 17.
Right.
17 to 25 before you were famous.
Right.
Like, that's who I believe Teachers. I could get. Sure. So Robin Williams would always cheat with, like, sixes.
Right.
It was
kind of
weird.
Right,
like,
right,
why?
Right.
Like, because I don't know. He's not Robin Williams. He's the guy Rob yeah, Williams from, you know, from yeah. East Lansing or whatever.
Yeah, of
you
course,
know.
Man. You never see yourself, no matter how, yeah. whatever happens, like, you never see yourself as the person on television. Like, you see you always see yourself, I always see myself as, like, because I'm with my internal monologue all
right.
day.
Yeah.
So I'm with those thoughts. I'm with that guy.
I saw Louis once, this is before. So weird. It's like a line. But, like, he was on stage at the Cellar, and he was, like, talking. He was on stage for 10 minutes.
Right.
It's always fun to watch him. And he's like, ugh, what the fuck? And just on his black shirt with his fat fucking belly.
Yeah.
He's like, crumbs. He goes, I have crumbs on me? I'm standing up. It's like, because they're resting on my, he's like, the fuck is wrong with you? And he just fucking switched them off. Like, have some fucking respect for the audience, man.
Fun.
Yeah, he's just commenting on what a schlub he is. And that's who he is.
Yeah.
He's not a guy with power.
No.
That's you guys saying that. He's a schlub. They say the same shit about Rogan. It's like, it's yeah. irresponsible to say this about COVID. Why? I'm a comic.
Right,
just
right.
Just because a ton of people listen to me doesn't mean I should suddenly change my comic's dumb fucking mind.
Yeah, I think that's like, yeah, I think that's where people miss.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't see how, like, oh, that person, because it's like, because you almost like don't want to make that adjustment, because then if you feel like you're making that adjustment, you're selling yourself out. Do you know what I mean?
You see it all the time.
Yeah.
You see like comedians
yeah.
in shows, like suddenly get like people like, you have a platform, you have to use it. And it's like, I have a platform because I'm not using it.
Right.
Any of your shit.
Right. And it's like, I never strive to have a platform.
Yeah.
You decided upon me having a platform.
Yeah.
You gave a person a gun who's never held a gun in their life. And then they shot everyone in the room,
Michelle,
and you're
gets
like
that. Where they put on her this like feminist icon, and
oh,
she's
nuts,
constantly
man.
Like, "What? Get the fuck away from me! I just want to hang out at the back cellar table. Like, what are you guys putting on me? I never was that. You're just because I have a pussy. Like, what are you talking
yeah.
about?
Yeah, yeah.
I
yeah.
haven't ever done any of those things.
It sucks too, because then it boxes you in, because you're like, oh, well, now I can't explore myself as an artist, because like I have to adhere to your standards that you placed upon me.
Yeah.
That's so unfair.
Yeah.
That's so mean.
I never wanted to be that guy.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
You needed to fill a void. You filled it with me. So now I'm no longer a person. I'm your void filler.
Yeah.
I can't exist as anything else.
Book and Steel once.
Yeah.
And this is a while ago.
Yeah.
With Soder and Feeder. And some lady comes up to her. It was right after her HBO special. Was like, hey, what you did for the country was amazing. And we were kind of like looking at it. And we're like, what'd you, like, you know, I don't know anything.
Hiroshima.
About everybody. Yeah, I was like, what'd you do? Like, what are they talking about? She goes, my HBO special. I'm like, what does she mean? What do you do for the country? She goes, I don't know. I don't know what the fuck that's supposed to mean for the country. I just put out a special. What?
The amount.
She was like, oh, I hate this. And then she got 20 times more famous.
The amount, when I would open for her, the amount of bad Donald Trump art that people would try to give her in the green room afterwards was unreal. It would always be this like feathery gray woman with like a lot of aqua scarves on who would come to the green room.
It's like, you must love this because I, yeah.
And she would go, and they would always go, Michelle needs to have this. He'd be like, Michelle needs to have your bad coffee shop drawing of Donald Trump. Oh, it was amazing, man.
It's like, you know she can afford a Monet.
Yeah.
You want her
She'll
to get-
buy the corpse and put it in her living room.
Like, what are you talking about?
And never see it.
How self-obsessed do you have to be like, this is good enough to...
Oh, it's not. That's
a gift to someone that like, you should have. I heard, I think George Clooney, a long, long time ago, on his way, like ER George Clooney,
right.
was on a late night show, and I think it was him, might have been somebody else, was talking about he just bought some shitty art at a yard sale,
yeah.
and then gave it to his friend as a high level artist.
Hilarious.
Pretended like,
great.
And producers like, this was worth like 150
so
grand.
So funny.
It's this guy, who's like, oh, awesome. And seeing it on the wall, and just every time going, like, that was fucking garbage. And you have it prominently displayed on your wall.
No, man. Yeah, I would love to have seen those Wolf fans. Oh, man, it was amazing.
The normal ones are stand-up fans. Yeah.
Incredible, just stand-up fans. But then you would see them, and like they came with an agenda. You know what I mean? And it was just like, they were such caricatures of themselves where you're just like, oh, I wonder who it's going to be. Maybe the young girl with the purple hair, geometric hair. Like, it was so funny.
Yeah.
But
purple hair.
Yeah. Oh, man, you said something I wanted to go back to it for a second. I know we had that whole talk about going back to stuff.
But while you think about it, let's take a quick word from our sponsors. Hold on 1 second, guys. Let's pay some bills. All right. Thanks a lot, sponsors, for sponsoring this sponsor. Do you remember?
Oh, man.
You've had all this time to thought. You had 88 seconds to think about it.
I had 80 seconds. I wasted them on listening to the sponsorship.
I'll tell you another story while you think about it.
Please.
Bill Cosby, forget the obvious jokes. It's too hacky almost. Owen Smith was opening for him.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Before any of that. And he said some guy was like, I want to give you a drum set. And Cosby had to be like, oh, thanks, man, but no. And he goes, no, I really want to give it to you. He goes, hey, man, I appreciate it. I'm good. And the guy's like, dude, I want you to have this drum set. Then he started getting surly. He goes, I want you to have this drum set. He goes, I said no. And he goes, dude, what's that? And he started getting more angry. He's like, why don't you check my drum set? And he goes, hey, man, listen. And he looked him in the eye. He goes, I have 7 drum sets at home. I know you know I play drums because I do. I have 7 drum sets. I don't want another drum set. If I did, I would buy another drum set. Now, give me your hand. And he shook his hand. He goes, give me your hand. Shook my hand. He's like, do you get it, man? And he looked him in the eye. He goes, yeah. He goes, okay. Thank you for the offer. Go home. And it was like, damn. It was that. It's like,
yeah.
Just not even considering someone else's life.
Right. It's what a weird thing, too. Like, you're like, I just wanted to make some jokes. Here I am arguing about taking a drum set from a stranger.
I just tell stories about my childhood and snowball fights.
How did this happen? Where I have to aggressively tell another man, I do not want your drum set. Oh, but yeah, what I was saying, that irrational confidence, that's the thing. I would love, like, for a day, and it doesn't even, I mean, a day might be too exhausting, but yeah, just like an afternoon, to spend an afternoon with that amount of irrational confidence and just see the world through that lens. Yeah. Like, what a fun, weird ride it would be.
What a fun time it would be. Yeah. It would be like, everybody wants to hear what I have to say.
Yeah.
Stars get like that a lot. They've been yes man to death.
Yeah,
so now
they
think
that
their words are important.
Right.
You see it in high level comedians,
yes,
too. Yes. Where, I mean, I can name
sure, yeah,
three for sure,
right,
and probably more, who just like, it's, they're thinking of it as they're saying,
yep,
it, but they're saying it as if it was this,
oh my God,
super intelligent, smart
strike of lightning from God that came to them.
It's like, why not just say like, hey, you guys ever think, it's like, say, present it like that, but like, they've been told their words are,
yes,
so important.
Do you'll see it when like they give more ceremony to thoughts. That's when you start to see it. You know what I mean? Where instead of just going like, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Many times when I'm like, you don't even have it yet. You don't even have it yet, and you're presenting it like it's you. This is your thesis.
Once you see a hand run through hair, you're like, this guy's on a bad track. This is going sour. And then like,
it's like Coke talk without Coke.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
Right. Without like this, without the fun speed of cocaine. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But then the thought's always like so obvious that you're like, it took your brain that much struggle to come up with that, where they're just like, ah, man, guns. Yeah. And maybe then, not.
Yeah, exactly. That's your hot take.
Whoa.
The most obvious. Dude, we used to go to I did 1 year at Yeshiva University.
Oh, okay.
In New York when I was religious.
Oh,
like when
sure.
I was losing it. But we'd go to some talk shows, some daytime talk shows.
Right.
It was a fun thing. And we were trying to get
on
air.
Yeah, that's a good time.
We always try to get
that's
on air.
That's fun. Yeah, yeah.
So you just got to raise your hand when they go to the audience.
That's great.
Yeah. And one of them was people who abandoned their children. So it was all about that. They're getting their deadbeat dads in.
Right.
Look at this kid who doesn't even know you, all that shit. And my friend, so he's like, yeah, so you have to, I was like, well, I think instead of running away from your responsibilities, you should take care of your kids. And then sits down and everybody claps. And we're like, what? That's your take, bro?
That's your take.
That was your hot take. And he's like, I got on. It's like, oh, yeah. Should someone not run away from their family?
Yeah, I think Rock like always had that great bit where he's like I forget what he said.
You're
like,
supposed to read.
Yeah, you're supposed to take care of your kids.
Yeah, that's not,
such
a
funny bit, man. Man, you're so smooth with setting me up and then just talking normal, so I never know when you're doing it. So, because you've done it a couple times where you're like, you were just like, you know, discovering things or like, so I never know when you're doing it.
I
so,
always like, oh, but
no, it's fucking.
What was the thing we were talking about? Discovery, right?
Dude, it's great. I just never know when I'm like, oh, I'll just want to keep talking about this, or you're like, hey, pivot to the other thing.
I was like, shift slightly.
You can even just tell me. Because I don't, the ambiguity will drive me crazy.
It's fine. It's like meandering and then coming slowly back to discovery.
No. Yeah. No, I didn't catch it at first. You literally said made man at first and I didn't catch it. I was so fun. Like, I was literally like, I was like, right, what a weird 2 words to drop in. Then I was like, oh, fuck, I know what he's doing.
It's like you. Pick up on it if you want.
That was so obvious. Man. So, the pontificating. Once they sit down on a stool, that's like you're headed down a bad direction.
So in Edinburgh?
Yeah.
So you're going to have, so you're working on this as a,
yeah,
as
yeah,
a show.
Yeah, 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 sure.
So you're going to have to do it at Edinburgh.
Yeah.
It's the best training for it. It's the best 25 sets of a crowd who understands what like
long
form thing
is. Yeah, exactly.
You should. So like me, Michelle, Soder, DeRosa, not Sean Patton, not Gethard. They both did like actual theme hours. We all just did stand up.
Right.
Which is fine. They love it.
Yeah.
But the general there is a theme hour.
Yeah.
So this would go perfect there and you would get hell out of it. But at Edinburgh, there's this guy. Fuck, I almost had his name.
Take your time. I'll do an ad.
Okay.
Guys, if you're out there and you're like, I like potato chips, but I also like guns. Well, allow me to introduce you. Damn, I felt so confident in the beginning.
Oh,
and
why did you stop in the middle?
I don't know. I got,
thought you were going to go somewhere.
I know. I really should have. I got so comfortable. I was like, I fucking improv a commercial. And then I got kind of distracted by birds.
Today's episode of Ari Shaffir's Skip and Think Podcast is brought to you by distractions. Guys, if you're looking to concentrate on what you want to talk about, but don't want to get all the way through it, look no further than distractions. They'll get you off topic every time. Now back to the episode.
Nice, man.
Anyway.
Oh, the guy's name in Edinburgh.
Yeah. So, whatever. But he had a stool, and he starts talking, and he goes, hey, guys, the stool is here. I'm not going to use it because of these tropes for Edinburgh. One is dead dad.
Yeah, sure.
And
that's
like
exactly.
When my father died.
Nope,
yours is before you were born. But, I mean, sure. They'll be made fun of, for sure. Like, for sure.
And it's like already so in my head. Do you know what I mean? Like, the idea that I'm doing a one-man show makes me want to kill myself.
Yeah. Yeah. You just got to make it stand-up-ish.
No, I know.
That's the hard part, but you'll get it.
Yeah.
But, like, anyway, he goes, the stool, that's when stuff gets dark.
Yeah, I love
and then,
that.
And then he didn't touch it, just did, like, normal fun stuff. And then he goes, you know, my father died, and he just gets it and sits down. And then there's a spotlight on him, and everyone dies laughing.
Yeah, it's so funny.
He didn't even lean into it. He was just it's a 40-minute from now joke.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so great.
That's so great, too, because, like, you're like, here's how I can do a sincere, like, now the audience knows the sincere moment is funny. That's
right.
So smart.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like getting jokes. Yeah. You have to get jokes in there. So you're
the
not
gear
leaning
shift,
into it.
Yeah. The gear shift is like, that's what I'm finding is like the most difficult part. Because I'll tell like my mom stuff. And like that's anytime I add jokes to that, people don't even like it because they're like, oh, this is just compelling. So if you add jokes to this, like hard jokes, they're like, oh, you're distracting us from the momentum of like the interest of it. So it's like my sections are like stand up, but then hers are like
it's weird
story.
Because it is compelling, but also you're like that's not what you want to be.
I know.
So like when you ever hear that Tig album, that one great one, the one that Largo.
The
one that Louis put
out.
Yeah,
the one that Louis put out.
Yeah,
right.
It was her. A day later or 2 days later, whatever, finding out she had cancer.
Right, she just comes on and she kind of just says it.
Yeah,
right?
She's sorry on whatever, and she's not understanding. Why the she keeps going? Sorry, so I'll get back to this joke. So this joke about a bee, and somebody from the crowd's like, "No, don't."
Right,
like,
right.
What? Like, hey, that's your normal stuff. It's not. They're not shitting on it, but they're like,
"Yeah,
hey, dude, this is an amazing moment." Like,
yes.
Like, do you not understand? I don't think she did, because also, like, you're we were saying, there's no moments of silence,
right?
So it feels wrong, even though it's like this is really gripping. The modernist way to do it would be like, "Hey, I'm being serious because I have no choice right now."
Right.
But I'm not going to intentionally try to be serious.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
she was
just like,
I'm trying to joke. I just can't get there right now.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because that's so live. I mean, I think the thing was named that. But, like, that what you're talking about, it's like it's so fresh and raw for her.
Yeah.
That, like, she can do it so naturally in the moment.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I
and
feel,
you try to recreate that, and it's like
it's like
a
it feels
false
too
now.
Contrived. Yeah. And I feel like I'm lying to the audience, and then that's like a whole thing.
Yeah, I think people had problems with Hannah Gadsby's first special. For that same thing.
Yeah.
But from everything I heard from people at Edinburgh, like, you had to be there in the room.
I get that.
You're watching it on TV and it's not the same. The emotion was there in the room.
See, that's what I get. And I think that's like, with something like that, it's like, it's so much built upon raw emotion, not just like comic emotion, but like raw emotion. So it's like, if you're not there for that, you're going to miss out on a lot if you're not seeing it in the proper medium. Hers was, I've still never seen it, but I also like what.
So talked about. You have to see it.
Yeah.
I'm so talked about. It's almost like irresponsible.
Yeah.
And by the way, I was starting to talk about it on a podcast intro once, and I was like, "You're in the hand of it." I was like, "What am I? I haven't even watched. I'm not gonna be that guy.
Exactly.
I haven't even watched it.
I've never watched it, so like, I will refrain from really having any like opinion on it." But it did, like, from a very outside perspective, it's just like, "Oh, it seems like she's doing a thing that we don't know how to label yet."
That's,
you know,
thing.
What I mean?
They did the same thing with Reggie Watts. They did the thing with Bo Burnham.
Right, exactly.
And they're like, you're not doing the identical style. It's like, so what's your issue? If you called it like comedy music, would that be okay?
Would that be okay? Exactly.
And it's like, I mean, with Bo, for instance, it was like, actually for Reggie Watts too, it was like there's this brief time period in their careers where they were in comedy clubs.
Yes.
From small black boxes or a home to comedy clubs. To, you know.
Totally.
But it's like, guys, he's going to be out of here very shortly. Do not worry about him not doing basic comedy club stuff. He's just, this isn't his like end result, man. Yeah, man.
Pay this no mind.
You're worried about it for no reason.
You will not see him again when he comes to Phoenix. You will not be able to afford a ticket.
Exactly.
No, 100%.
And everyone gets so mad about the label.
Yeah, you are right. It's like, once they just need a box. It's so strange. There can just be no like fun mystery in the world.
Right.
You know,
it it's
can't
like,
just.
It's just a show.
Yeah,
that's the cool thing about Edinburgh too. So you'll get straight music. You'll get straight, not even trying to be funny.
Right, I love
and
that.
Not trying to be serious. Just like here's some like there's some lady I followed my first year. She just did impressions of great musicians.
Right,
so she's singing exactly like Nina Simone. Then she did exactly.
Oh,
people
wow,
like,
amazing!
Wow, it's amazing.
Damn,
but.
Yeah, but where do you put that? Yeah, because like comedy club, it's like, okay, like I think maybe it's just like the name of this place is going to house this specific thing. You know what I mean? It's like the building is given a specific name, so now like the art has to adhere to like what happens inside this space. But going back to what you're saying about like maybe anything can happen, like that's what I miss about like it, because you know you get further on in comedy like. You know, like you're alone or you're doing comedy in like prescribed sort of places to do it. Like I miss mics where I would just be like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to see. Like my, cause like people ask like my favorite thing I've ever seen in stand-up. It was literally this guy at Eastville years ago. It was just me and him in the room at like a 5 o'clock mic. He did a 3 minute diatribe about why NASA is a conspiracy theory. And then his last line, he goes, that's why I didn't like the movie Armageddon. And I was like, this whole thing has been about
that.
Armageddon? That's unbelievable. And I was like, oh, I don't think I'll ever get to a level of achieving art like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I miss that unpredictability.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Maria Bamford did a thing at Largo when Largo was the room.
Right.
It was like the alt room.
Right.
I think it used to be something called something here.
Oh,
Luna Lounge, Luna Park.
Yeah, Luna Lounge.
Yeah, and that was like the head of, and then and then Largo had, it was like the center of the alt world.
Right.
All these clubs do that. Some not clubs, venues become like this thing.
Yeah.
Hannibal Show at Knitting Factory was the coolest show in New York.
Yeah, where Rafifi like before that for like Invite Them Up.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, for sure. And then Dublin's in L.A. was like the mainstream.
Sure,
I've heard that would launch careers.
Right.
Launch Dane Cook's career.
Wow.
You know, it was like. Every agent, every cool person in a tastemaker city,
right,
would be there.
Yeah.
So all these tastemakers are suddenly like, "That's our guy,"
right?
And they would tell, you know, So Maria Vance does this thing about Largo. She goes, Sheryl Crow has this song, "Every Day Is a Winding." She's just saying, and it was like goofy that she was even mentioning it. And then there's this whole fucking thing that you have no idea. I wish she would have recorded that. And then just back full circle after 15 minutes to "And Every Day Is a Winding Road," everybody.
Amazing.
And that's when you're like, what the fuck am I seeing right now?
Yeah, amazing. God, I love that. Those, even if they're failed attempts, like, I just love them so much.
Go for it, at least.
Yeah, just go for it, man.
It's like the first guy who tried the Fosberg flop. Fosberg,
sure.
You know,
I'm actually not familiar. I would just be lying.
Everyone else would. That's pretty good. Everyone else would do high jumps and just jump, try to jump over, or get over with your legs. John Fosberg or whatever jumped and did this thing where you jump.
Oh, sure, okay,
and you arc your back over and you just get more.
Totally.
And so he just gained a foot on everybody, from this new technique.
Right.
But even if he tried it and just failed, like hit the thing,
totally.
The next guy's like.
Yeah,
you fucked up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
I'm
gonna do that now. You know what I mean? Like,
man,
you didn't nail it, but like now we're all doing
it. Yeah. What a weird. Like, I wonder because like you know, with comics, you're like, well, I do that, so you're not gonna do this bit. I wonder like with athletes, if like there is that thing where they're like, hey, can I do that too? Is
am
it
I stealing
like,
that?
Am I stealing a like, am I stealing something a body can do?
Yeah.
I wonder if that exists.
Well, the European two-step, right?
What's that?
Oh, I thought you followed basketball a lot.
No,
no,
no! I do, I do. I've never, I've heard, I've never honestly.
Westbrook, Harden, they all started doing it.
I've never heard it called a European. It's always a Euro step. I've never heard it called a European two step.
I might be I might be.
You
actually,
refined son of a bitch.
UTEP two step. It's like that slow, like
Euro step.
Okay,
Dwayne Wade was like famous for it.
And you're like, what is it? And then they all started doing it.
Yes. Yeah.
No, I'm mixing it up with this.
Yeah, like
UTEP
Manu did it years ago, and you're like, shit, can we do this too? Or like,
he's like, stealing. That's my move. You know. my move.
You have to be from Argentina. Yeah. Show me your papers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cultural appropriation. You just have to say that to make
That's
sure no one does it.
The lowest form of cultural appropriation. They're just like, you can't steal that basketball move. Oh, I'll tell you this. This is you want to talk about cultural appropriation a little bit. This I've been doing it as a bit, but I'd be just curious to get your take on it, or just it's just like fun. So my mom, you know, she's like single, right?
Yeah.
You don't know that. I don't know. You're aware, right? You haven't.
Hot and heavy.
You
and
keep track of everyone's mom's relationships. So she, you know, she's like alone the whole pandemic. So she like ran out of like English speaking shows to watch. So she got like very into these like subtitled like Korean dramas. Mm-hmm. She got super into the show Vincenzo. Because of that, my mom, Italian woman, just has like decided she's an Asian person. And like I've, you know, I in like it changed my like, because I used to be like cultural appropriation was wrong, but then I'm like at 75 it is adorable.
Oh, yeah.
She, dude, she, her fridge is filled with dragon fruit. She's like,
really?
Full throttle. She does a thing. She writes down, and this is like borderline, like, I don't know what to think of this. She writes down things on little post-it notes, like from the show, like food she wants to try. And then she goes to her nail salon and she just shows them the post-it notes. And then they just go like, yeah, this is food. And then she just goes and buys the food for her apartment.
She doesn't know what they are?
She doesn't know what they are. It looks like a Korean market, but it's like, I've never seen such a case for cultural appropriation, like
being a positive,
the good of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I never understood that. They're like, it went from, I get it, like Elvis stole black people's music. Like,
sure.
But Metzger always said, it's like, but they can still do their music though, right? You didn't take it away from them.
Yeah, it's really funny.
But it's like, but it goes from that to like, wait, can I not be into your culture and your music? Can I
right.
not hear African music and go like, oh, that's awesome?
Yeah.
Like, no. You have
yeah.
to, do I have to hate it?
You tell me how to naturally
no one
feel
this shit out.
With good intentions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, no, it's so weird. I remember because my, you know, my girlfriend is younger. She's, you know, more, she's like, you know, a progressive check for me. You know what I mean? You have those people who are like, hey, is this? And they kind of find fault with you and go, okay, there's some things I overlooked. I gotcha. She, like, Black Panther came out and she was like, oh, we can't see it in the theater opening night. And I was like,
you have to leave room for black people?
It's so weird.
And you're like, you know, it's just a superhero movie. Yeah. It's what they want you to do is step back towards people who are more racist than you.
Yeah.
Because you're like,
that's
oh,
funny.
I just saw it as
yeah,
a superhero
yeah,
movie.
Yeah.
You see it as a black
right.
only movie. I don't do that. It's like, well, be more aggressive.
Yeah, it's really
so that
funny.
You can be progressive.
Dude, your progression has created segregation.
Yeah.
That's so straight.
Like,
that's really
what
good.
Are you talking about? I wasn't even. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see a movie and they're like, you're taking a racial stance.
God.
And you're like,
and
I'm,
honestly,
I'm
it was
supporting?
A B- minus movie.
Yeah, it was.
It was fine.
It was fine.
It was fine, but it wasn't. It wasn't like as bad as Green Lantern. That was a terrible one, but it wasn't as good as any of the ones you
well,
know.
Yeah,
it was like, man, I don't get the motive. Michael B. Jordan was probably the best in that.
Yeah, he was great.
But generally, it's like,
it was fine.
Some corny parts, some parts of like, man, I don't really feel any danger here
for
the characters.
Yeah, it was fine. And then the other thing, it's like, that sucks for those movies, because then I would imagine, you know, but like I would imagine as a black person, you're like, oh, I can't say I don't like this now. You know what I mean? Like you've similar
South Park
to Michelle.
Did the
whole thing. Oh, really? Okay,
oh, South
yeah.
Park Cartman was like, to Token was like, I know you love Black Panther. He goes, no, I didn't see it. He goes, you didn't see it? He goes, why are we even talking about this? I go, wait, I know you saw it. He goes, I didn't see it. And he's like, you saw it. You have to. You're black. And he was like, it was this whole thing. I got to rewatch that episode.
Man, South Park, it's, I always, I take South Park for granted. I think a lot of people do this just because it's been on so long. And
yeah.
It's just like so steadily good for years. But then when you pop in on one, you're like, oh, this show's still just unbelievable.
It's like the taking all sides and maintaining
funniness. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is what we were talking about before. Is like, why are these people doing hot takes and not being funny?
Yeah.
And they stay hilarious and really cover a subject.
Yeah. And I think it's because I don't know what it is, but it's like they got so big quickly, but then like the fame of it declined, but like they didn't change.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like they weren't like, oh my God, our fame is declining. How can we cater towards like what we can do to like get back to where we were? Just notoriety wise.
Yeah.
So they just maintain their comedic integrity. And then because of that, they've just continued to do funny shit.
And the reality is their fame probably didn't decline. They're standing in relation to other people.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah,
so it's like, so let's
yes.
say they got 100 views.
Right.
And everyone else is getting 20 views.
Right.
And then everyone else caught up, and now they're getting 150 views,
right,
and they
right.
stayed at 100.
Yes.
They're like, They're like, I know people get crazy about that. Like, I have to go be at the number one. It's like, it's not about being number one. It's about being all you can be.
Yeah, and that's such a great lesson in being like, okay, like, we achieve to the level which, like, we can achieve with our comedy in terms of, like 100 views, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But, like, to be content in that and not to change to just climb higher for the sake of climbing higher, but to be like, oh, shit, we're happy here. Let's just be hilarious here.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's, like, such a great lesson in, like, yeah, do that more.
Yeah, let's just enjoy this. Yeah. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Also, like, especially in today's culture, like, you get too big, you'll lose the ability to be able to do whatever you want.
Oh, yeah.
The pressure will mount so much that it's almost like, yeah, it's just like, you can't, you just can't.
No.
And it becomes lame, too. Remember, you know how you're into some band, and you're like, because they're underground?
Of course.
And then when everybody gets to like them, it just feels lamer.
Yeah, for sure.
Discover them. Only a couple of my friends discover them.
Yeah.
But, like, wholesale discover them.
I remember I was like, Interpol's so cool, and then they played The Garden, and I was like, I guess they're not so cool anymore. And it's like, you would imagine you'd be like, it'd be the opposite. I just, you know, I don't know what that is within, like, that human bone inside you that you just, like, reject, you know?
Yeah.
Because maybe it's, like, something about discovery. Maybe and not to be too, like, whatever. but, like, maybe it is where you're just, like, there is this thing of, like, oh, I found this. And the excitement of it is the finding.
Yeah.
It's not, it's there's part of who they are, but it's the finding.
There's a sandwich place in my neighborhood. And I moved to New York.
Yeah.
Moved to this neighborhood and found this late night sandwich place. You know, the bodegas everywhere.
Yeah,
but this one has, like, really interesting sandwiches.
Right, okay.
Not just good with fresh bread, but, like, roast beef with, like, cantaloupe, jalapeno, and seaweed.
I love it.
In a way that you were like, I don't know,
sure.
But the guy who does it is an artist. He's
like,
he's an artist, yeah. and he's like 30 different, like, what? I'll try.
It's like a sexual thing where you're like, I guess I do like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, yeah, eating ass. All right. I never thought I'd do the first time.
Sorry, my cackles.
No, it's okay. It's okay. No, because I'm about to say something horrible.
Oh, gotcha.
Those are parents.
Oh, okay.
But, like, some girl was like, I want you to, like, slap me. And
right.
I'm like, no.
Yeah.
And then she was like, seriously. And she's like, come on, don't fucking pretend. Like, slap me. I'm like, for real? She goes, I want you to fucking full on. And I was like, okay. And then, like, do it. And then whatever she did, I was like, oh, man, fuck, I'm hooked. I didn't know. God, I've never been this hard before. Wow, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's discovery, too. You're just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, now I add this in, but also now I have to deal with this.
Yeah, exactly. Not everybody's going to be into this, so.
Yeah. Great, now I have a thing to explain.
I will not watch an anime porn for fear of it changing completely everything that I'm into.
I won't even look at octopuses. But anyway, yeah, what you were saying about the sandwich place.
Oh, yeah, and I found it. I walked across it. I'm like, oh, my God, I told Big J about it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's awesome. Then we looked it up on Yelp, and, like, 1,200 reviews.
Right. It takes a sheen.
But if I was given to, like, looking up best sandwich places and found that, it wouldn't feel like it's mine.
No, I think that's maybe what it is. It's, like, a little bit of ownership.
Yeah.
You own a little bit of it within the discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
I was walking through Chinatown in San Francisco, and just, like, I'm going to go to a restaurant. 10 years ago, I'm gonna go to a Chinese place based on what's 2/3 to 3/4 full,
right?
Not empty because I'm, like, lame, but not so packed I can't get in,
right?
And just kept walking, then found one. I'm like, oh my God, it was so amazing. And same thing, you look it up, you're like, it's a well known place.
Sure.
Like, I feel like that's my job. I got it.
Yeah. I'm the guy who found that.
I
discovered this place. Yeah, there is, like, a certain, like,
and the weird thing now is like. You discover a music, right? You're like, oh, I discovered this music because Spotify suggested it to you.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't discover.
So
it was discovered.
I don't want to work as a team.
Yeah.
Me and Spotify found this. Yeah. How dull is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's better to be bargain basement, like, vinyl, and then, like, well, this looks like a cool cover. Like, God damn, this band is cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I don't have a record player, you know what I mean? But the idea of thumbing through and, like, finding something there, whatever that moment is like, oh, that's a moment I want to have.
Yeah. Dude, I love records for that reason. First of all, it's an active listen.
Yeah.
You're choosing to put this record on.
You're not skipping.
You can't skip.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't skip.
But,
and then, like, it's you're listening to it in the order they wanted you to listen it to it for a whole side. So you're stuck for 20, 25 minutes.
Right.
And you're committing to it. And then you'll find songs that aren't the hit, but like, I don't know, I just love that one.
Yeah.
Also, 30 years has passed. So
totally.
Your sensibilities aren't going to be the same as what hit big then.
Yeah. Well, you're also like, some records you're like, oh, like it hits you where like, oh, there's a story here. Or like, this is part, you know what I mean? Like, you listen to like Rumors by Fleetwood Mac and you're like, oh, this is the story of a breakup.
You know? Yeah. Rumors, yeah.
Like by the time they get to Chain, like that's like them trying to like hold together or fall apart or like whatever it is. But it's like, I forget like the first line in that album, but it's like the beginning of a breakup. And when you hear it in succession, you're like, oh, this is amazing.
Yeah. Pinkerton's like that too.
Right.
But you can't just hear a song on shuffle.
No.
It doesn't do it. The songs are good, but it's like.
But it just exists as what it is and not like as like a piece to a whole.
Arcade Fire said that when I first saw them. I think it was after Neon Bible or the other one or The Suburbs.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, we're an album band.
Right.
We do album rock.
Right.
And you're like, what does that mean? And when you see them, it's like, oh, you never stop playing. It's not just here's a song, here's another song. It's like here's the album all the way through on purpose.
Yeah. And I don't know. There's something, I don't know, maybe it just goes in like spells, but like maybe just hearing so much like clips of stuff or like being in a world like immersed in clips that I'm like seeking out more long
thing.
Form. Yeah, exactly.
I that's what I think about Hard F-Bomb, the second F-Bomb.
Oh, track, sure.
Where it's like there were too many.
Right.
People are like, how dare you?
Yeah.
Pull it back. And so whatever the line should have been, and they like silence it.
Yes.
So now a well-placed.
Oh, my God.
It gets like a booming. Because the crowd is like, they're like, hey, the zeitgeist, we've been hearing too much of that.
Right.
And then the feeling is, without thinking about it, we haven't heard it enough.
Yeah.
And so you hit them like, we've been craving that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's also been gone. It's like, if it's gone long enough and it's out of like.
It's retro almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, this isn't being used right now as a hurtful thing. There's no fire behind it.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like, you know, if that word is hurled at you still all the time.
Yeah.
But I guess outside of the world of that, it feels like. That's not in the lexicon as much, so the sting of it isn't what it was. And I'm saying this is like probably a very ignorant sentence, but yeah.
Che said it once. We were talking about the N-word.
Yeah.
And he said we were talking about somebody in comedy who got like fired from their job for using it in sentence like, hey, how come you can say ghetto ass? N-word, but I can't say ghetto ass. And I was like, dude, just use the word N-word. Use the word N-word when discussing why you can't. This is not 25 years ago. Just know it's possibly, it's a tightrope you're walking, so have your fucking balancer.
Yeah, have you not heard?
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
But Che said he's not offended by it. It was like, why? Because I've never heard that word being used the way it's supposed to make me mad, which is, hey, you fucking get out of here.
Right.
But it's like, it's all just like, oh, you're singing along to a song, or you're saying, how come you can say this word, but you're not actually hurling it at anyone.
Yeah.
Which is like the thing.
Yeah, totally, man. That's, because I get it. It's like, and I'm not dismissing that, like, that doesn't exist. That definitely exists. But it's like, if that's not your story, your relationship with the word is like, it's so different.
Yeah.
Because, like, to you, it's like, oh, that exists as an abstraction, but that's not part of my history.
Right. There's
so I
that
don't
too.
Have the same, like,
but I mean, like
visceral
to related,
connection.
Yeah. To relate it to me, if someone was like, hey, I've heard there's a bunch of people who don't think the Holocaust happened.
Sure.
And it's like, you're not saying the Holocaust
didn't
happen.
You're
saying you heard the Holocaust didn't happen. So it's like, that might be triggering, but it's like, no, it's reminding of they're the problem.
Yeah.
To come into like, the Holocaust didn't happen,
right.
You guys are lying. It's like, that's the issue. Right. Not mentioning other people having that stance.
Can you believe some people think that?
Like, well, why'd you say it when you said it?
Yeah.
Can you believe some people think?
Well, why'd you bring it up to
about
me?
About the Holocaust that it was not on the... all on the up and up. Like,
yeah,
you can just say it.
People can conflate like routine ignorance of other people with like your own thoughts. Do you know what I
mean? No.
Like, so like I used to do this bit. I'm not gonna do a whole bit, but like, so like I would always say, you know, my grandma was conservative, but I'd be like, I think like the bar of like where you can get to is like where you start. Because like one day I asked her, I was like talking about gay rights, I was like, you know, I don't know why, like, what's your biggest fear? And she said gypsies. And I was like,
oh,
so she's never, if she's starting there, she's never going to get to transgender rights.
No.
But it's like, but just doing that bit, people would be like, well, first of all, some people in the gypsy community were like, how dare you bespeak the Roma like that? But then other people were like, oh, like, that's a trans, like, phobic joke. And it's like, oh, I'm telling you.
What is gypsy?
Yeah, they now they'd like to be called the Roma.
Instead of Gypsy.
Yeah, instead of Gypsy. Yeah. Right.
Gyp was the... All right, whatever.
I don't know enough to dive too deep into the politics of it.
So what she said, so she goes,
that's what she said, but people would like, you know, after I come off stage or like on the internet would just be like, oh, that's like a transphobic joke. And I'm like, I'm just saying what she said, yeah. And I'm pointing out what she said is, this is like, oh, she's not going to get to where you want to go. Like, that's just it's like a mild observation, but people are so jumpy, you know?
So jumpy. And the problem is now, the crowds now, when you bring up a topic,
yes,
they've heard so many angry people, they're like, oh, you're putting me in a bad position, man. Yeah. Can't you just make jokes about lollipops? I probably will laugh about it, but now are people going to look at me laughing at it? And it's just like, fuck.
Also, too, it's like a little, like, you've watched me for, I'm probably not going to open with that joke, you know what I mean? So you've watched me for a little while, you've gained an understanding of where I'm coming from, so wouldn't you at least, like, have a little bit of trust that, like, I'm not going to just completely, like, abandon my identity to be horrific towards you for a moment?
Dude, I was doing a show in Nashville on my last tour. I was talking about Judaism and stuff. There was some anti or homophobic stuff from the Bible that I was covering.
Right.
And the whole time I was talking to some flamboyant gay right in the front where everybody could see, you know, he's on side stage. And so, like, you run stuff off certain audience members. Hey, you're the redneck.
Yeah.
No, they're not, but they're like, I'll go with you. You know? Anyway, so I started doing this thing, and it's a switch joke. So it starts with, like, very anti characters doing very anti homophobic. And,
right.
And I was stopped, like, hey, man. You trust me? He was like, yeah. He goes, I'm going to get you to a good place. But do you trust me on this? Because I trust you. I'm like, all right. And then you do. And it's 7 minutes later.
Right.
And then it's all very positive.
Right.
And he's like, thanks. I'm like, yeah, I got you, dude.
But like, yeah, you have to.
You can't stop that in the middle or it's really bad. It's like.
Yeah, but it is. It's like a weird where you have to like give that precursor. You know what I mean? There's not like an implicit trust with like a comedian and audience so much anymore that's like, oh, I imagine this guy's not going to take me to a place that
and
I don't.
And now you imagine they will because everyone's everyone's a villain now,
yes,
even though they're not. But that's the stance. So then you're like, you might be a villain too. It's so crazy. We live in New York.
I know.
This is one of the most liberal places in the world. There are no villains here. And everyone's like, well, we need a 20% villain rate. So we'll just, you littered.
Yeah.
Get rid of them.
The villain here is a hero almost everywhere else. Like, I mean, I think that's always the thing. Like, it's like, yeah, I grew up in a conservative Italian family. So you know what I mean? Like, I was fighting with my family not to say the N-word at dinner.
Right.
So, like, so you know what I mean? Like,
I'm on your side,
like,
on the front
lines. Like, I've been on the front lines for years, man.
Yeah.
So please, give me a break.
Me and Norman did this Houston festival, half music, half comedy.
Yeah.
And some Houston comic, I forget her name. There's no way I'll remember it, but she said the Houston scene is far better than the Austin scene.
Okay.
Because the Austin scene, you're talking to the converted. Everyone there's liberal.
Okay.
You're not fighting because we have cowboys here.
Right.
Rednecks who are in our audience all the time. So you have to win over with jokes, and we're on the front lines. It's actually dangerous.
Yeah.
There, it's all like, yeah, you all already believe what we believe.
Yeah. It's kind of boring.
Yeah.
And it's also, I think David Byrne said this, like, when you have like more parameters, like the art gets better. More things you have to work around because like now, like whatever you're doing has to supersede that confinement.
Yeah.
So it's like any joke where you're like, okay, this joke has to be good enough to win over cowboys and an audience who's already there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like what you're doing by setting up a foil is you're making whatever you're going to do be stronger because it has to be good enough to win over people who fundamentally don't agree with it.
Yeah, I was doing a pro gay marriage joke in LA right before they got the right to marry.
Right.
So that was a long time ago.
Right.
And it would always work. And then I did it in Nashville, and you could just tell, like, the jumping off ground I had was, like, past where they were.
Right.
So they're like, I didn't realize, like, I was starting with this is a given that they should be allowed this and this. Or
right.
Like, and then a lot of LA was doing the same thing. George Bush is evil, so let's move on. But you try that in a blue or whatever, red state, and they're like, what do you mean? Like, you have to do jokes along the way for that.
Yeah.
You can't just assume they're there with
you.
You
can't just, like, assume exactly that, like, they're in your same frame of mind. And, like, with that, it's like, well, that's better because you're like, okay, now I have to add jokes.
Right,
so now
I have to do,
it's like, that part's, like, the fun part of the job, too, where you're like, you know, like, those jokes are always the best where you're just like, hey, like, I'm straddling the line. It's like I'm playfully straddling the line. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My intent isn't to make you feel uncomfortable, but I'm aware the subject might. So now I need to work within that. And like, I mean, that's such a fun place to be.
It's the best to get a laugh like this. We're like,
trying
not, they're squeezing to not laugh. And I'm like, you don't want to laugh. And I'm getting you there. Those
and you
are the
feel,
best ones.
You feel like a, there, like, there is like a little bit of like, I don't know. Like
it's like a skyhook three-pointer. Yeah. It's like, it's just cooler than a three.
Yes, exactly. There is like some flamboyance to it that you're like, man, I'm doing a thing here.
Yeah.
It's a cool feeling. I will say that.
One of my, it's like these moments. Actually, we were talking about before the podcast, where it's like, there's certain moments in comedy where it's not about how much money you're making or how many likes you get, but just like a perfect
the
moment.
The best.
I had a late night at the store before the store was a store.
Right.
The best crowds are when four heavy set black women sit up front.
Sure.
And they're having a good time.
Yeah.
And it just feeds out to
man.
Everyone.
Yeah,
their
yeah,
laughs
yeah.
are fucking huge. And black people can really run an audience.
Oh, 100%. White people never, I think, wholly admit this, but we look to black people as the barometer for how we...
Racial jokes, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But in general, like, you know, how we should act in some ways. You know what I mean? But so if, like, if a black person's laughing, they're like, I want to be cool.
So we're
I'm
doing late
laugh.
Night. Yeah. It's all crowd work late night there, and we were younger and whatever. But, like, I had a bit about how Jews were the original N-words.
Sure, yeah.
Because, like, we were all... Basketball was all Jews.
Right.
Boxing was all Jews. We were underground.
Right.
We were like, we couldn't get regular jobs. We weren't accepted by society. So whatever. And then the stance was like, you guys are just like a couple hundred years behind us for slavery reasons. Like, you know, but you'll be right where we are.
Yeah.
And then someone else will have to be the N-words, you know. Yeah. But I was doing it and I said the N-word. I was like, we were the original that. And some guy goes, nah, man, nah. This jovial black guy. He's like, you got to say nigga. You got to say nigga. And I was like, oh, so if I say nigga, it's okay. He goes, yeah, then you're cool. And then I was like, I just like, it's like these jumps where I go, yeah, okay, how about this? I don't want any of these white women dating a filthy nigga. And he started laughing. I'm like, these niggas are taking our jobs. And he just starts dying laughing. And, it's just like, and everyone turned to him.
Yeah.
I'm allowed. Yeah. And it was just this cathartic, fun thing. And it's those moments where you're like, but you got to take a chance.
Yeah, it's the only way to get that moment. I mean, it's not the only way, but it's like, that is a way to get that moment. And when that moment happens, it's such a connective. It's such a connective feeling.
15, 18 years ago.
Yeah,
it was one of my
man.
Favorite moments on stage ever to get a laugh out of that.
Yeah.
Out of like horrible racism with a twist. It's like, yeah, those are just like better moments.
Yeah, because I don't know. Maybe it's because like as a group, we've all decided that this terrible thing is funny. So we've all overcome something as a group. So it's like we've done something.
Yeah.
And that's a bonding like an audible bonding like no other because you've taken a bad thing and made it joyful.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. By the way, they're like, you're making fun of this. I'm like, right. Make fun.
Yeah.
I'm creating
take all the
fun.
Gravity from it. Yeah.
You're over there.
Yeah.
Angry.
Yeah.
We're here making fun.
Right. And it's not you saying like, oh, these horrible things don't exist in the world.
Oh,
they
my God.
They do. But what if we tried to laugh, like, for this moment? And I'm not saying, like, this doesn't stop legislation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's like, I'm not running for anything.
Yeah. This doesn't take away my donations. They still exist.
It's just all non-stand-up fans trying to weigh in on stand-up.
Yeah.
And it's like, you guys don't even know what we're doing over here.
Well, I think it's because, like, a little bit of, like, when stand-up is done so well, it seems so effortless.
It seems like you're actually talking.
So people go like, oh, there's nothing put into this. And I think if it's like, if you knew the intricacies of stand-up, you'd be like, oh, this is like a completely worked over script that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Where it's like, man, inflections
are
studied.
Are in there.
Yeah. So, but in that effort, it now looks spontaneous. And because of that, you go, well, this guy just said that.
Right.
And it's like, no, this has been mulled over to a point of boredom.
Sometimes you're like, I can't do these bits anymore right now. I'll have weeks where I'm like, I'm not doing any of my bits.
Yeah,
like,
where
I'm
it's
just
like,
doing crowd work.
It's a lunch pail job where you're just hunched over a notepad just going through angles and just picking out the best one.
Do you feel, let's go back to your dad for a second.
Please,
do you feel different knowing that? I mean, it wasn't part of your upbringing.
It wasn't so much so like, part of my, I mean, I felt different in the sense of like going from like, okay, what my mom told me to how people were reacting to it. And then I felt different when I looked him up. So I had this ex-girlfriend. I don't know if I explained this or not. I forget what we talked about before the pod and after. So
Michelle Wolf.
Right. So Michelle, just a heinous individual. She, I told her about him. So she looked him up, left for work, and then she was like, "You should look for yourself." I never kind of wanted to. I always had this like sort of ominous feeling based on my mom's like face, like that there was like, you know, more at stake here. So then I looked him up, and the first thing I found was it was just like a newspaper headline, and it was just like armed robbery, murder, whoa, contract killer, violent hitman, and like that was a moment where it's like he went from like entertainment, like Tony Soprano was like television as like a cartoon character, to like, oh, this is my father.
You felt it.
Yeah, I felt like, oh, I'm ashamed of this. You know, like this went from like glorified violent fun to like a real thing.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't a costume anymore. Like this is like, so that, and then weirdly started doing the show, and then because my mom and I never talked about him because it was like just it was like painful for her to talk about, so then started doing the show. She was like all right, we have to talk about him, kind of told me more details.
Yeah, you gotta do the research.
Yeah, and like in those details, because she was like they found him. She was like, "I'll just let you know some details you can't find in the paper." She was like, "After he died, he loved to sing New York, New York."
He loved Neapolitan ice cream.
Yeah. No stories. What if it was like a bunch of boring details? And she was just like, "The man loved lemon pepper chicken. She couldn't get enough."
When Sports Illustrated would come every week, cover to cover, every single week.
So yeah, she was like his big thing, like, because she only saw him as a person, she never knew him, like, you know what I mean. So she was like, "I'd love to sing New York, New York to me." She was like, "He was found in Manhattan in the trunk." She was like, "I didn't listen to music."
Where were you from?
North Jersey.
Okay.
She was like, "I didn't listen to music for like 3 years." She kind of told me these more like intimate details about what she went through, and in those intimate details, I was like, "Oh." I weirdly was like grateful that he died, because I was like, oh, if he lived, I wouldn't have had a chance to be the person I am.
Why?
Just because like he was so entrenched in the life that he was, that it's like, oh, if I came along, it's like I would have probably followed suit. Because she saw him as like, oh, this was a guy, if
family
given
business.
The opportunity, would not have been in this life. But it was through his family, so it, you know, kind of adhering.
Would not have been in what life?
The life of like someone in the mafia. Like, she was like, oh, I saw this, like, good-natured guy who'd like to sing to me. But right. He couldn't be that guy because of the pressures placed upon him since, you know, he was just born into it. So I was like, oh, shit, that, like, you know, because you look at yourself and you go, there's no way. But it's like, yeah, there is a way.
There's a way.
Yeah, there's a definite way.
Yeah, you just get
yeah, exactly.
Sure.
So it's, so that's when I was like, oh, this was, like, another twist of perspective of just like, oh, I am, like, almost grateful. And I looked at him as like, oh, he's this, like, weird... He's a weird good father, and the only way to be a good father is by dying.
People end up saying the world is in really, let's call it binary, you know, where it's either or. And
sure.
It's just like, that's just not a realistic, like, you can be a really good dad.
Yes.
And be this horrible.
Totally.
You know, whatever, like a murderer.
Yeah.
But like that doesn't affect, because there's also, I guaranteed, hitmen that beat their wives.
Yeah.
And then there's hitmen that didn't beat their wives.
Totally.
So it's like, one is better than the other.
Right. Yeah, it's like, I mean, it's, you know, whatever. It's like.
And you're all parts of that.
Yeah, exactly. You're all parts of that. And, like, these people are, it's like everybody in history is, like, so multifaceted. Like, you know, like, I used to do a bit, never worked, but, like, just like about Jesus, where it's like, everyone's like, he's this greatest guy in the world. But it's like, yeah, not to, like the guy who had to make the crucifix. He's like, he made me work on a Saturday. You know what I mean?
Right,
but it's
right,
like,
right.
Yeah, that's
and
everyone.
Like, he was a criminal. Fuck
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Like, he was great. Fuck you. He was great. Shut up. Yeah. It's hard. We're going to kill him today.
There's going to be so much better magic coming down the pipeline. This guy's a one trick wonder here. But yeah, that's always been like the interesting trajectory with my dad, is like that lesson. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, do you feel shame about it?
No, not anymore, because I never talked about it.
Yeah.
Because I would try it, because I was like, you know, as a stand-up, you're like, oh, I'll just do it as like a joke chunk on stage. Yeah. But like it never felt right. Like I could feel the audience's like conflict a little bit, because it's like, oh yeah, they also think it's cool, but they also understand there's like some heaviness here. So like it didn't feel right to just do as part of a stand-up act. So until doing the show is when I kind of became like, I kind of figured out that was the, like, because you know, you have these feelings in you, and then you work on these feelings, and then you articulate them, and you're like, oh, that's what this is.
Yeah.
So it was like, not until doing the show was I able to like sort of put to words, I think, this feeling of like this like ambivalence of like some shame, but then also some like thanks.
Did you ever see Ben Affleck doing the 23andMe thing?
No.
So, or whatever the other one is.
Ancestry.com?
Yeah, one of those. Sure. They had a TV show or a segment on like 2020 or 60 Minutes, something like that, where they go with celebrities and find out your roots.
Right.
And then there's Outtakes, which got leaked. And Ben Affleck is like, okay, well, you're we did, you know, whatever. Turns out some of your ancestors were slave owners. And he goes, stop, no. Takes off his mic, is we ain't doing that. And they're like, well, what do you mean? Like, we're just, the point of the show is we're going to find out, you know, about the ancestors. He goes, we're not doing it, dude. And his publicist comes in, I think. I got to show it to you. And they're like, no, we're not doing that. He's like, let's start again. He's like, well, what do you want to do? Like, then I'm not going to give you rights to this. I'll stop right now so you won't get the interview. So you'll just have me, like, not talking about it. How do you want to do it? Like, and then they're like, all right. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Let's do it again. And then they're like, you know, because there's more than one ancestor. So they come back and they're like, hey, turns out one of your ancestors, some really good thing.
Yeah.
On the Mayflower, or was like a very woke thing. Like, like was a lawyer for slaves or something. Right. I don't know. And then he just goes like, and then he's all actor mode. They're all so fucking suck so fucking much.
Yeah.
He goes, oh my God, that's, wow, to find that out is like. That's just really great to know I came from that, you know? And like, and he sells it so good because he's an actor.
Yeah.
But he's such a piece of shit because he's like, he won't be honest.
Right, of course.
And it's like, you're just phony. You're not a piece of shit. You're just a phony.
Yeah, you're a phony, but that's.
And it's like, dude, you didn't do it. But like, you didn't do slaves just because your fucking great, 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 great grandfather did. Like, you know, it was a time period in America.
Right. Also, as an actor, like, wouldn't you be more prone to be like, hey, let's live in that real moment?
Yeah, it's like damn, that fucking sucks.
Yeah, that's actually interesting.
Like, ugh, I'm disgusted by it.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Right. Watching you reconcile with that is so much more compelling than you being like, I don't wanna touch this. What's wrong? Like, unless Ben Affleck is like, I have a bunch of slaves, dude, I can't
let's get out right now.
Yeah.
This is like going to be really bad for me. And my slave business.
Yeah, she's like, J-Lo loves them. She's conflicted.
We're
it's
about to go public.
Thing.
I can't. Yeah. She's conflicted. Yeah, so it's like, why are you even feeling any shame over this? Like,
yeah. I felt shame. Well, I think it's just like, it's the brutality of it. You know what I mean? Of just being like, this is my dad, and you're hearing the words like murderer.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think it's just like the visceral just impact of that over everything else. But then, stepping back, and then like, yeah, you know, it's just like anything. Where you just like, you talk about it with a lot of people, and then the gravity gets taken away from it. To kind of going back to what we were saying about like jokes in general, or like the power of what that can be.
Yeah, but then you hear somebody hear something the first time, like, what the fuck? Like, oh yeah, that's the way I wrote it.
Yes.
The way I felt it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, it's trying to write those honest feelings.
Where do you do the show?
I'm going to do a show coming up Union Hall for the New York Comedy Festival November 13th at 5 p.m.
Okay.
Because they don't respect Italians in this business.
November 13th at 5 p.m. Yeah. November 13th. That's a weekend.
Yeah, Saturday.
Saturday at Union Hall.
Yep.
That's one with the bocce ball?
Yes.
Oh, I love that place.
Yeah, it's a cool
perfect
spot.
Small
environment. Exactly.
That's great.
Just what you're saying, don't have to explain, you know, the subtle departure from stand-up.
Right. They're already on board.
Yeah, they already kind of know.
I had to explain my first year of Edinburgh doing a straight American hour because my plan was this is not happening 1 year. Then 2 years later, it was like every third year. Then I come back and like, I want to show you what an American hour of stand-up is.
Yeah, right.
And then the next year I'll come back, I want to show you what an American doing one of your dumb style of stand-ups is. And
fun.
So that was like my Jewish hour.
Did you work any of that hour out here, or did you just work it out? Okay, cool.
No, I had a weekly at the Fat Black, and I would take questions.
Oh, that's
so
a good
like
40 move,
minutes
man.
And I'm like, what have you not understood about Judaism? Because I'm taking a lot of this shit for granted.
Right.
And then they bring stuff up like, what are those pillows? I'm like, what pillows? What? Like, it didn't make sense. And then I'm like, oh, the tallest case. Oh, I wouldn't even consider.
That's
but like, your
cool.
eyes are coming at it as a pillow. Or
that's
like,
really cool.
Yeah.
To be
what's
like,
the wigs? What's the things? Like, oh, you guys noticed. Okay, yeah. Yeah, sure.
It's so funny to be like, my people have never considered them to be pillows.
Uh-huh.
That's really great. That's a good. The Q&A is a good.
And then you're on stage, so you're forced to riff. So one of those jokes will carry you through to like build the fire.
Yeah, and then that seems so natural in the moment. Well, I mean, it is natural
in
the moment.
And then like, yeah.
And these shows, it's like it's all about exploration. So like that Q&A, that's a good strategy, man. I'm gonna try that.
If you got nobody after you, But my first year doing an American Hour, I was like, hey, guys, just so you know, there's going to be no crying this hour. It's an American Hour. There's going to be no fucking things learned. If you're looking to cry, go watch Cool Runnings. I got nothing for you. Please welcome Ari Shaffir. You just get out there and do
you
your
blow
hour.
Up the stool on stage.
Yeah. What was I saying about? I was about to say something about you're doing this there. Oh, about people feeling shit. I think any time people say you're insensitive or how dare you do this joke or that joke, and sure. not just on comedy. Like I remember there were some chicks who were taking, they took butt pictures, I think, or tits out or whatever.
Yeah.
Just like all over the world. And they went to Angkor Wat, this temple in Cambodia.
Yeah.
And people are like, so disrespectful. I think they got arrested.
Right.
And you're like, how can you do that so disrespectful? And it's like, the reality is, they just see it as some relic.
Yeah, they don't
know. It's like the Empire State Building.
Right.
So they didn't let it in. Or how can you do a Holocaust joke? Like, because you're not feeling the Holocaust.
Yeah.
You couldn't do that right after you left the Holocaust Memorial.
Right.
When you would feel it, then you're like, I can't do that
joke right now. Totally, man.
If you lost someone 9/11, you can't do a 9/11 joke.
It's like, man.
I don't know, you'll never like this.
My favorite thing was, you know, closing shows by saying, oh, good night, 9/11 never happened, and leaving the stage. But then, like, this year there was so much because the anniversary, I was like, oh, I don't feel right doing that.
Right.
It feels awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would do a joke about jerking off on the subway.
Right.
Or seeing people jerk off on the subway.
Right.
And then after that Louis thing happened, I could tell the crowds were like, what are you saying about
all
this?
Like, right,
oh,
right.
Nothing. This predates all that.
Yeah.
But they're putting whatever on it, or school shooting jokes, and then like I don't read the news, so I'm like, what happened that day?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's going
God.
On? Why did it get
always
quiet
happens.
When I'm saying
yeah,
this?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh. It takes on new media. And they think I'm writing it now and about that.
Right.
And it's like,
yeah, they think
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're taking pot shots at a thing that just happened today. Where you're just like, I wrote this 4 years ago.
Yeah. I'll give you. I've been doing it too long, but it's not bad. Damn, that'll be interesting to do it. You should do Edinburgh next year.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to, man. I'm gonna try to actually tape. I think the Union Hall show
for sure.
To do
and look
it.
It over. Give it to some friends for some tips.
Yeah.
I'm doing New York Comedy Festival at the Stand. I'm going to run that Jew Hour again. I'm going to dust it off.
Oh, nice.
So
what's it called?
Jew.
Oh, fun.
Ari Shaffir Jew.
Do you do any visual stuff when you do it, or you just do straight?
No, that's allowed. What do you mean visual stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. Like stuff like on a screen behind you.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
No, I thought of doing some things like that, but it's not my style.
Yeah, I've thought
people
of
have used that a lot in Edinburgh. Not ad nauseum, but it's been done a few times.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be that out of...
No, there aren't, like, there's maybe like two moments where I see like it makes sense, but everywhere else I'm like, you know, it doesn't, you know?
You can. It's like, how much do you lean on it? Where it's like, you can show an image of a guy that your father killed.
Sure.
And it's like, you can describe it, but like, look, here's a dead body. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just trying to think out loud.
Yeah,
but, like,
no,
so
no,
they
I
feel
know.
Like,
yeah,
bad dude. When I say bad dude, here's what he did to
somebody. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm like, yeah. And then you gotta relieve that tension.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, every time I think of it, it feels too distracting
from
like the drive of the story.
Yeah. Dude, now I'm remembering all these great moments at Edinburgh. I saw somebody's show and he had, oh, God damn. So there's all these sound guys and they're really, they're big, they make more than the comedians do.
What do you mean sound guys?
They're ready for sound cues, they're ready for lighting cues.
Oh, yeah,
they
okay,
do these,
sure, yeah,
they're these
totally.
Shows more than stand-up hours. So like mine was like, I'll just turn the mic on and
what a dream.
Good.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really need anything. Some of them are really queued up and stuff, and so they make money. And for the paid fringe, like, no one makes money. Michelle did as well as you can do. She sold out 26 shows, sold them all out, added two shows, sold those shows out. She walked, I think, with $3,000.
Jesus, I should have never broken
and
up with
they
her.
Walked, yeah, and they walked with like $28,000.
Wow.
So it was like,
oh,
it's just
God.
So unfair.
Wow.
So do the free fringe. But like, what was I gonna say? Oh, so this guy, and he was like, hey, hit that sound cue. It's like, my sound guy, everybody. And he's in the back, in the, like a booth. Or so it's like, I'm watching this way, and he's back up there in a sound booth.
Yeah.
You can see. And he was like, thank you. And he goes, whatever. He references it a few times, but he talks about people fucking just taking off on people or like abandoning a family or something like that. Or trying to, he does this long story about putting a mannequin in place of whatever. I forget exactly how he did it.
Right. But he like,
and then at some point, he references him again, and it's like, Bob. The sound cue. Bob, the sound cue. And everyone turns, and it's just a mannequin in the sound booth. And it's like, Bob, the sound cue. And yeah, it's like, fuck, you
oh,
got
man,
me,
man,
dude.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Because there's no other reason to reference him that hard other than to.
That's nice, though. That's what I think is, like, fun in these shows. You know what I mean? Like, setting up these, like, large-scale callbacks.
Yeah.
That's a great time.
Yeah.
Because that's, like, something in stand-up where it's, like, you see it done, but it almost seems, like, too tactical. You know, like, with, like...
Intentional callback.
Yeah, like but with these shows, like, it feels like, oh, it's, like, this cohesive thing. So it feels like it's almost like, oh, this helps the show.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool, and I've never seen that as like I've never utilized it, I guess, as like a tool in stand up. So yeah. It's kind of cool to see it like.
You'll get a lot out of Edinburgh too for seeing other people do that style.
Yeah,
and like you're gonna see techniques.
Yeah, I like that so far about it. You know what I mean? It feels new. It feels like like when you first kind of start stand up and you're like, "Oh man, this is all like so exciting because I don't know where
I could do anything. There's nothing. Should I be Mitch Hedberg? Should I be Sam Kinison? I'll find my style.
Yeah.
I don't know."
Yeah. I don't know if you get like this too with like stand up. You get so like attuned to your own brain, like you almost know where you're going to go before you get there, so you're like kind of bored by what the outcome is going to be.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like if you think of a premise, you're like, oh, I know my voice.
Then I'm going to take it here.
I mean,
there,
exactly.
There,
you're like,
right? And you have to, like,
I know
challenge
my
it.
Yeah. You know your voice like well enough that you're just like, yeah, I know what I do here. This sucks.
That's a tell. You always see him. He's so high level, and he's always like, "That was just a switch. That's all that was." And you're like, "Damn, dude. All right." He's operating on like a 10, and we're at an 8, so we can't even see what he sees.
Did he say he when he called hummus terrorist peanut butter? It's like I haven't laughed that. I've been just like just knee jerk laughed that hard in so long.
Terrorist peanut butter. It's so
great. Funny. It was so quick, and it was so just like it was just such a like a fast hit.
Yeah.
So
when's that
cool.
show? November 13th. So I gotta get this out before November 13th.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
November 13th, Union Hall, 5 p.m.
Where are the tickets? New York Comedy Festival.
They should. If you go to my Instagram, Instagram at comedian Anthony DeVito.
Another Anthony DeVito?
Yeah. There's another Anthony DeVito who's been a comic for a while.
Ray DeVito.
No. No, actual Anthony DeVito, who was a stand-up, but now he does like commercial acting. But yeah, he took it, man. So,
yeah. Oh, the best is this Rachel Feinstein.
Yeah.
You know Rachel?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Do you know who else has her name?
Yeah. It's like a California, like...
Super high-level artist.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah,
way
yeah,
more
yeah.
famous
That's
than Rachel.
That's right, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Way more famous.
Yeah.
And she's like, fine, I'll get an Instagram. She's like, who is that? Tell her to give it to me. He's like, no, it's someone uses her name for her thing.
I remember, I think, like, she had, like, you know, every year they do those, like, sculptural pieces in, like, Madison Square Park. I think, like, a couple years ago it was, like, her work.
Was
there, and I
was
Jesus Christ, Rachel.
The best is Feinstein. She got a call to be like, hey, we love your style. We'd love for you to do a style, a fashion breakdown of whatever. She goes, oh, I am style, all right. And then the way she found out, like, oh, no, not you. And she goes, I mean, but I do have a sense of
but
style.
But still, you know, you don't want to see what I have to say about belts.
Finally. Exactly.
Yeah, but I have, there's like a link on my Instagram page that has like to the tickets.
Okay. Well, I'll put the link in the bottom of the RSS. If you're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, I'll put a link down there.
Cool.
And then on YouTube also, I'll put a link down there.
Thanks, man.
Maybe I'll put a Chiron.
Yeah, do fun Chirons,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, 147. I'll do another one. What was I going to say? All right. Well, interesting. I mean, did finding out about this at all, like, help you grow or change your opinion on anything?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't say. I don't know if it like helped me. I don't know if I'll know right now if it's like helped me grow.
Yeah.
I think it's like so fresh.
Yeah.
But it's definitely.
How long did you find out about it?
Out about him.
Yeah.
I was
no, a long
like,
time ago, but then the
like
more
7 years ago. But then, like, I think this is like the time where I've like processed it the most because I'm like talking about it
to
people.
You're intentionally talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, I mean, it's helping. I'm tough to say, like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't honestly think I don't know yet.
Yeah.
I think like probably, and I just can't name the feeling right now.
Yeah.
But I mean, it definitely has been, cause like I'm someone I think where it's like, I have such a hard time letting people down. So like with this, I feel like every time I tell people, I have to like let them down a little bit.
What do you mean?
Do you know what I mean? Because like, because people get so excited. Like whenever, like I've told people like, oh, my dad, and they're like, I've had people be like, was he Sammy the Bull? Like wide eyed, you know? And it's like, yeah, even if he was,
it's so amazing,
you know?
It's revered, but you're like, you know, this is horrible behavior, right?
Yeah.
But the, and especially in today's culture, where you're like, that's what are you running those emails? Like, but I'm telling you about a guy who murdered people, and you're happy.
Yeah.
You think it's cool?
Well, because it's
so
like,
weird. There's villains and heroes based on not your actual stance.
Yes, and I do think it's because like Dave. Because, man, the movies or TV shows, like, man, they're so popular. They're so well done that it's like, oh, they exist as entertainment in most people's eyes. Like entertainment that means something to them. So to be like, oh, this thing that means so much to you for whatever reason, to be like, oh, here's I'm going to poke holes in it, is like, I don't like doing that. You know what I mean? I'm a pretty agreeable person. So for me to have to...
Yeah,
do
you
don't
want to be the guy that's not funny. Someone died.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, come on.
I don't want to be a bummer.
Yeah, we're not trying to focus on that horrible stuff.
Right.
You can't laugh at anything.
Yeah. It's very much like.
There's people who work in the avocado industry. For you to make fun of the brown ones, it's like, what? So now you're going to take away their livelihood? You're like, come on, dude.
Yeah. It's like the opposite of everything that I stand for. Yeah. But it's also, this happened to my mother. So I'm so close to it where it's like, so I can't reconcile just getting on board. Because then I feel like, oh, I'm betraying her in some way.
Right.
So, like, that part's been interesting, being like, oh, I'm this person who wants to say, like, nothing is off limits and we should just approach everything from this comical perspective. But when it happens in your own home, like, I have to feel a little different about it.
Yeah.
So that has always been, like, the struggle.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Some of the shit, too, you can't unsee. Like, they talk about that documentary about the... meat industry.
Oh,
you know, like,
sure.
Once you see it, you're going to go vegan.
Right.
Food Inc. or I don't know what it was, but it was like, oh, then I'm not going to watch it.
Right. Right. I'd like to continue to live in this wonderful bubble that I'm in. Yeah. Yeah. No. Totally. You get to a place too where you're just like, man, I've already been sad enough. You know?
What?
I've been sad enough. No. I've had enough things happen.
I'm not interested.
I don't want to do it all again.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's been cool because it's something that I'm like, I've always wanted to talk about on stage and I've never felt the proper medium. So this feels like it. Yeah. And also for me, it's like, I think I was getting a little bit bored isn't like the right word, but like just like complacent in stand-up.
Stand-up, yeah.
So like I think like this was a good.
No, that's
like,
cool to challenge yourself to new things. Like to just a really new like style.
Yeah, exactly.
So then it's like, I grew a lot from that Jew hour. I'm like, damn, this is like, it's like everything has to go in specifically to this. And then you think of, I'm sure you have thought of other jokes and you're like, I'll put it aside for later. But
this
just doesn't go here.
Yeah, there's I've tried like 4 or 5 jokes where like it was in the initial show, but they've just fallen off because they just slow down the story, which I do with stand-up jokes now, but it's like,
right.
They're good jokes, but it's like, they don't fit, so they're worthless here.
I had one about Noah. I had bad info. I was mixing up two people. Did I tell you this?
No, I don't think so.
And it was, I mean, a crushing part of it, just destruction about his he had 40 kids.
Right.
And it was just focusing on his wife's pussy. and just act out just fun, ridiculous, like degenerate kind of comedy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then some rabbi saw the show, I think in Norway, and he was like, hey, loved it. Just so you know, that's not Noah, that's this guy.
Oh.
Who had the 40 kids. And I'm like, and then for like a week, I was like, is there any way I can?
Oh,
like,
that's
and I'm
a,
like,
yeah.
No. And I'm like, just had to jettison it.
Yeah. Oh, man. When you have to say goodbye, especially a part that's just like right away, just hits, kills, just like you're saying.
Yeah.
But like, you know, you're like, and I could probably get away with this in the audience.
Get away with it. They wouldn't
be fine.
Know.
But yeah. I'll know, and I can't do this.
He had 4 kids. He had 2 boys and like a couple girls. Like, God damn.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's like, and it's not like when you do a joke and somebody's like, hey, just so you know, that's a Carlin joke. Like, ah, fuck.
Yeah.
Nah, I got to get rid
of it. Right, right.
But it's like, this one is like, there's no harm in this. I didn't do anything evil to my to my industry.
Yeah.
It's just not
proper information. Yeah.
But in any other stand up, you could just be like, yeah, I made up the details.
Who
and
cares?
Now I'm doing jokes about
it.
Yep. I saw a guy shitting himself in the woods. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I didn't, but whatever. Now here's 20 jokes about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, with this, when you're like attacking a specific like thing in history,
it
has to match. You just can't.
About your dad to pay it off.
Yeah, no, because that would be the hard part. Because like people would try to infuse like so like emotion that wasn't there from me, because people would always be like, "Oh, did you look at your mother any differently?" And it was like, I never, and like I understand the line of questioning, but it's like, oh, I would love for me to be like, oh yeah, I had this like wonderful epiphany, but it's like, no, the truth is, it's like, no, she's great. So I was like, oh, he must have been somewhat good if she loved him. And that was it. It's like, it wasn't this like painstaking moment. It was just kind of like, yeah, I was 18 and I was like, my mom is nice. He must have been somewhat nice. And that was it.
Did she know about his lifestyle?
She found out in like pieces. So
afterwards?
No, she found out like, you know, he just did what anybody does when you're like dating. You just hide yourself and you kind of, his just self was like, you know, more heinous than most.
Yeah.
And then like she found out, he said he was a gambler, and she was like, all right, this explains like cash on hand, weird hours. I'll take this, you know, and you love someone. You're like, okay, I don't want to, you know what I mean? You're like, I don't want you to not be a person I can't love, and I love you. So this is a, you know, a tough choice to make. And then he told her a couple of years into dating, he never explicitly told her. He was just, his father was going to go to prison. So he was like, oh, I, you know, probably like you might come across this in the papers. So it's like,
so I have to tell
her. I have to tell her. And then she asked for what? He said stocks and bonds. And then that she kind of pieced together like, there's got to be more here.
I mean, it's like the dog's on the farm. We had to give her to the farm.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this will be easier for you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. So she stayed with that thinking. And then once he went to prison and like she read the charges, that's when she was like, oh, like this is maybe a bad man.
I bet there was a moment too where she read the charge like murder in the first degree, murder in the second degree, where she was like, no, stocks and bonds. Like that doesn't compute with the narrative that's already in there.
Yeah, yeah. There must be a mistake.
No, you're the wrong guy here. What? Yeah. And then it's like, oh, right, he lied.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, 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 exactly. What's more plausible?
Yeah. I love when you're met with that. Like, we'll wrap it up here. This was the discovery where you're like, wait, why is that dude? It's like, because he's lying. And you're like,
Of course.
Right, it's that one detail that didn't let it make sense. Yep. And they're like, you can't trust that narrator, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Now the whole thing is rearranged.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I hope you do well in the show. Like,
thanks,
I'm interested to like talk you through it, but talk to you about it as you progress.
I was going to send you a script down the line just to get your thoughts.
Script.
Well, like, you know what I mean? Like, rough outline of, like, what the show is. Or I could send you a video. Whatever,
yeah,
man.
Sure.
We'll talk about it.
I'll talk you through it, too, because I found moments where, like, so you have to order it right, where, like, there's got to be some jokes in there, some details, and some stories. And it can't all be all story up front, then all jokes later. It's got to, like, arrange in a certain way.
Yeah, it's tricky and new, and what we're talking about, the fun challenge of it. But yeah, no, I want to get more of your thoughts on it for sure.
Yeah, well, good luck with the show.
Thanks, man.
November 13th at Union Hall. Ticket link will be at the bottom of wherever you're listening to this, or at comedianAnthonyDeVito.com. Yeah, Rogan had a guy who had JoeRogan.com for the longest time, and he was like, "Can I buy it?" And the guy was like, $150,000, and he was like, "What?" And he goes, "I'm a fucking real estate broker in Idaho, in Boise, and I do well with my name. I'm Joe Rogan Realty."
Right.
What do you? It's not like I'm just squatting.
Right. I'm a person.
This, man.
That's why
I got JoeRogan.com. You weren't even the Fear Factor guy yet when I had this website.
Right.
You were just the guy who used to be on a fucking, you know, top 20 show.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like,
you were an unnamed guy on news radio.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a thriving real estate agent in Scottsdale.
What have you been doing lately? And he's like, Fear Factor. He's like, I've never heard of it. I think he finally bought it. But like, you got to kill that Anthony DeVito.
Yeah. I'll talk to people from my dad's
side. Your dad's friends,
exactly.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Bye.
Your sixth great grandfather volunteered to serve in the Patriot Army.
Wow.
He fought, Ben, in the American Revolution.
Wow. That is incredible.
You are descended from a patriot.
I knew I felt a special affinity for the football team. It wasn't... That is really, really something. I love it. I'm developing this movie about the Revolutionary War. Now I see why I was drawn to it.
Yeah, so, you have a personal connection.
That is amazing.
Oh, that is a little cringeworthy now as we're watching it. So
yeah.
he issued an apology on his Facebook page. You guys can put that apology up, and he says, "I regret my initial thoughts. You know, he said it was cringeworthy and on and on. You can read the apology.
All right. That was the episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Fucking cool, Anthony. Don't forget, get tickets at arishafir.com on Wednesday for the Salt Lake City Gala Show. Me, Ren Azizi, Ryan O'Neill, and the one and only Kevin Hart. Mark Norman are coming. Tickets are $55, I think. And one more, TBD. We had one guy coming, but he has a herniated disc, so now he doesn't think he'll be able to come. And I don't know. The last guy will be a fun guy. Whoever it is, it'll be fun. You'll be excited. So get tickets now at arishafir.com. As well, Tampa and Orlando in November, Oklahoma City, Boston, San Antonio in December, Phoenix and Cleveland in January, and Denver in February. I got to add something else in February, right? Or just go hella skiing. Just go hella skiing. Two meanings on that. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to follow Anthony DeVito online, on social media and shit. Let him know. Oh, guys, Doug Smith just was so happy with how everybody responded. He got some fucking Jehovah's Witnesses reaching out, being like, I've never heard anybody talk about that shit before. So I always like to say thank you guys for not just supporting the podcast by subscribing and telling your friends about it, not just supporting it by signing up for my Patreon, patreon.com/Ari Shafir. But really just reaching out and telling the guests that, you know, you enjoy their episode. The more you do that, the more the fucking word gets around. And then everybody's like, you know, just hit them up on Twitter, hit them up on Instagram. Really fucking shower them with fucking love. You know, if you do that, I can get any guest I want. As long as you fucking shower them with love. Also hit my Patreon up. But either way, fucking go out and reach out and tell the guests. Fucking really enjoyed your episode. Thank you very much. DMs, comments, whatever it is. Follows, anything. Get off Twitter, but if you're on Twitter, reach out. Let them know. Thank you very much for tuning in. Until next week, I'm Ari Shafir, saying so long. Wait, no. This has been Ari Shafir Skeptic, episode 446. Right? My daddy was a mobster. With Anthony DeVito, for Anthony DeVito, I'm Ari Shafir, saying so long. I did it. I got it right. I did it. You know you make me cry. How can you love me? I don't understand why. Oh, Daddy, if I can make you see, if there's been a fool around, it's got to be me. Yes, it's got to be me. Oh, Daddy, if I can make you see, if there's been a fool around, it's got to be me. Yes, it's got to be me. Why are you right when I'm so wrong? I'm so weak, but you're so strong. Everything I can't walk away from you, baby, if I try.